Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Down in Front. Our movie this week is Pirates of the Caribbean.
Hooray.
The Curse of the Black Pearl.
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Pop in your DVD or Blu-ray. Press play. Press pause. When the logo fades to black embers and smoke, the first frame you perceive of black embers and smoke, press pause. And in a second, I'll say 3, 2, 1, and pause. At which point, I'll press play. You'll press play, and we'll watch the movie together in perfect sync. It'll be like any other commentary, except, of course, this week with four friends in your head at the table. Myself, as always, Teague Christie, Christopher Hanel.
Hello, everyone. Nice to be here.
Michael Dorkman Scott.
Why did you do a Yoda thing when you yeah, said the title?
Because that's how pirates talk.
And Trey Stokes.
No. But
you know any pirates? How do you know? It's like, what color is a Tyrannosaurus Rex? You don't know.
I know a few pirates there on the internet.
Wow.
Anyway,
I'm going to let it hang. I will let that hang until you know what you did.
Look By the way, those are glowing embers, not black embers.
I said black embers and smoke. Oh, yeah, there was a comma between black and embers.
But if they're black, they're not embers. They're soot.
If there was a comma between black. I was saying there's black, there's embers, and
there's
smoke.
There's blackness.
Let's get this going, Yoda.
Anyway.
The original Pirates of the Caribbean movie kind of came out of nowhere after like a long journey to the theater by way of trailers that made it look awful. And in fact, the idea on paper was awful. You didn't need the trailers. You just knew for a fact that there's no way you can make a ride based off of a virtually storyless diorama ride at Disney work. You couldn't do anything with that. And the solution that made it ultimately work is that they basically just populated that world with characters, with struggles and obstacles, and they overcome their obstacles, and that's how you do it. I mean, if you made a Haunted Mansion movie where it just takes place at a Haunted Mansion but has meaning, yeah, you could do that too. But yeah, you know,
they should do that at some point.
Yeah.
Well, they tried.
Totally weird thing. They made a movie out of it by making it into a movie.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
In any case,
what?
Pirates totally works. And I recall seeing trailers. I think I told these anecdotes before, but I recall seeing trailers in the months leading up to it where it's got, like, it was the kind of thing where the camera is flying over the ocean and you're getting titles, and then the camera rises up and looks down on the island, and the island's in the shape of a skull and crossbones, and you're just like, I know what's going on here.
Yeah.
And of course, that's not even in the movie. That's just something they did for the trailer just so they'd have something to put titles over.
That's the point I bailed out of the Hook trailer.
Really?
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, okay, don't need to watch that movie.
But Hook had the navigation compass in the ocean. It was adorable.
Yeah, I'm a Hook fan, so we'll get into that some other time.
In any case, Pirates is amazing, and of course, it's Johnny Depp's movie, and Orlando Bloom is serviceable, and Elizabeth Swan, oh, that's your real name, is cute. You can see her nipples in one scene, and I like Norrington, and I like the monkey, and Barbossa is it's just a great, fun movie. I have no idea how it came about. I don't know how we got here, and I don't know how they pulled it off, but I'm not surprised that it didn't stick the landing as well as other franchises have. This doesn't have an Empire Strikes Back coming after it. It has more than a Reloaded, so it's in the middle there.
Yeah.
The only thing I can really say negative about this is that it is a little long. They are padding the stories a little bit, but I don't care because I always have fun watching it. It's a great movie. Chris?
That exact trailer, the teaser that you were talking about, I remember at that exact moment watching that and going, wow, I know now that Hollywood has completely run out of all ideas. Like, there was that period where they were announcing, you know, hey, they're going to do a Dukes and Hazzard movie with Ben Affleck and Matt Damon. You know, that was about that time, and we're all just going, no!
It's really a shame that never happened.
Yeah, so sad. But that movie, I remember that teaser going, this is going to be absolute dreck, and I'm going to cry. And then, to be fair, I have maybe seen, I don't go and see that many movies anymore. Yeah. I saw The Matrix a ton of times, and then Pirates. I saw Pirates 3-4 times in the theater. It takes a lot of effort to get me to the theater to see a movie once. That says a lot about how much I enjoyed this movie.
It says a lot about how much of a crush you have on Johnny Depp.
Yeah, well, I don't talk about that.
Well, she is pretty.
Michael?
While we're talking about that teaser, I think I've told this story before, but since it's the actual episode, I saw that teaser. I had the exact same reaction at that point with the skull thing, and then with the skull, and then it does like the inverted thunderclap thing where it's like, oh, it's lightning, but it somehow inverts the negative and stuff like that. But and then there's like close-ups of like a CG sword and people's names flying around, and the whole I distinctly remember this whole time I had this monologue running in my head where I'm like, well, Johnny Depp's really slumming it, and Orlando Bloom, fine. He's and I was like, Jeffrey Rush, he just won an Oscar. What's he doing in a movie like this? And I was like, yeah, they've obviously run out of ideas and blah, blah, blah. And then the last shot of the teaser was the undead skeleton foot coming down on the bottom of the ocean. That was like the one actual shot that went, and I was like, sold. Sold. I like stopped everything I was saying in my head, and I was like, I'm sold. They got it. I didn't know there was an it to get, but that is what they got.
That's the answer. How do you make a Pirates movie? Zombies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. As soon as I was like, oh, it's supernatural and all that stuff, because that's like the thing you remember from the ride is like the skeleton pirates doing their shit. And I was like, wow, I would never have thought to go there, but that is so awesome. And then I went to see it, but I still was kind of like, well, I don't know, because it's a theme park ride. And I loved it. I saw it at least 5 times in theaters, probably more like 7, because I loved this movie so much. It's been a little while since I saw it, and I've heard a lot of people saying it drags in the middle. That was not my feeling at the time, obviously.
I think it drags at the three-quarters mark, actually.
Okay, somewhere in that area. I'll be interested in watching it like this, like with the sound off, to see if maybe I feel it now. But I don't recall really ever feeling that watching it before.
The sound is dragging you along like a caveman choosing a mate.
Exactly. It clubbed me over the head, and it's just dragging me by the hair.
Trey?
Nice. That's hot. You haven't even listed all the strikes against this movie. Was it not less than a year from green light to release? I mean, not only was that, it was rushed out.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a massive movie that was going to come out, you know, in less than a year.
The post schedule was like 16 weeks.
Yeah. No one had ever done a movie of this scope. It's a pirate movie. It's a freaking pirate movie.
That was a weird thing.
You know, and
we can go down the list.
Right around the same time, William Goldman wrote his second book. It was right around within a year or two, in which he goes into great length about, I have 3 scripts in my life that I think are surefire.
Right.
Princess Bride, Butch Cassidy, and a pirate movie. And no one, I've had this script for 20 years, no one will ever make a pirate, no one will ever make it, because pirate movies are known to always tank. And every time someone says, no, that's not necessarily true, they make a pirate movie and it tanks.
Cutthroat Island. Yeah.
You know,
Cutthroat Island was the one that killed it up until this.
Exactly. Yeah, Cutthroat Island killed Carolco Studios completely.
Does Captain Rob count?
not Captain Rob, Roman Polanski made a pirate movie.
Muppet Treasure Island.
Yeah, well, that's kind of a little different.
Now, did Bill ever get his movie made after this?
No,
boom?
It's a, no. I'm sure he got to take some meetings, but
Damn it. It
still hasn't happened. It sounds like a fun story, but it's, again, based on a true story like Butch Cassidy, just a fun story. But let's see, there was the release schedule, the fact that it's based on
goddamn Disney ride.
Disney ride, you know, and then of course lightning didn't strike twice, because 6 months later Haunted Mansion came out and was not so beloved.
Well, they made the mistake of putting Eddie Murphy in it.
Yeah, which was kind of, you know, strange.
Why has it got to be a black thing?
No. It's got to be after Beverly Hills Cop 3, all the magic that Eddie Murphy had apparently just went away.
Yeah, and then the final strike against, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean, of course, no one knew it but the studio, but it's like, well, who you've got? Well, Orlando Bloom, well, Lord of the Rings, okay, and, you know, Keira Knightley, she's cute, okay, fine. And Johnny Depp, oh, he's good. Yeah, and he's playing the lead role like a drunken transvestite. Wait, what? Back up a sec. And the story goes that, you know, the supposedly the day the studio saw the first dailies of Johnny Depp, they're like, we're on a plane. Ho, wait.
Yeah.
What are you doing? You know, they were really concerned, supposedly.
They thought he was gay, right?
They didn't know. What is he doing? Yeah. What the hell is he doing? Again, it's like, if you sat down and described, here's how Johnny Depp is going to play this character in Pirates of the Caribbean, you would say, no, what? No, make that not happen. And yet, you know, clearly, if you go to Comic-Con,
the fucking best part of this movie.
It's a fantastic
thing. And there's
a
lot of great things in it.
So I doubt I went to see this in the theater. I don't remember seeing this in the theater, because it was one of those movies like, well, I don't have to bother seeing that.
Yeah.
And then I just started hearing like, no, you really. And so maybe it was on video that I first saw it. And it was like, oh, God damn it, I like this movie. This movie's lots of fun. What the hell? How is that possible?
You were offended.
I was offended by the fact that well, I wasn't offended at all. It was like, once again, William Goldman was ultimately correct. This is a nobody knows anything movie.
Yeah.
Because there is no reason this movie should work, and yet, against all odds, it does.
Cool. You're at the point where the title card has faded to black and embers and clouds. Like I am here, put your finger on the button. Here we go. 3, 2, 1, unpause. And they fade away.
Yeah, and we're right in. I remember this in the theaters. There's always that little bit of settling time where you're like, the studio things come up and whatever, and everyone's still kind of slowly settling in, and then everyone's like, oh shit, it started, wait. And everyone got quiet, like, oh.
They pulled a Star Wars.
I had a friend who
I even got my drink in the cup holder.
Yeah.
Who thought it'd be a good idea when he starts making features, and he said this 10 years ago, he probably doesn't feel this way anymore because it's such a terrible idea, but he's like, before my movie, I'm going to have just 15 seconds of ducks on a pond to calm everyone down. I'm like, okay, Kubrick, you do that, and I'm just going to start with the song from the ride so people know what's up.
Exactly.
We forgot to mention that the other strike against this movie is it was directed by the guy who did The Ring and Mouse Hunt. And like, oh, yeah.
Paul Verbinski directed Mouse Hunt?
Yeah. Oh, he's a box office winner, yeah.
Mr. Gibbs, the Rick Ollier of the Pirates franchise.
Yeah, he will explain everything to you.
Yes, he will.
Gibbs.
Well, but they at least hang a lantern first officer, like, dude, you don't have to. Are you the narrator? What are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, they wait three movies to do it, though. Yeah.
First officer exposition report.
You know what? I'm going to single-handedly revitalize the ability for those characters to work simply by being the guy who does narrate shit. Just walking around like, hey, Chris, come in from the bathroom and have a seat here in the living room. Like, I'll be that guy and just continue to talk my way through it.
I look at how old Norrington is here and Elizabeth here, and later on when they're about to get married, I felt really creepy.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, wait, how old is Norrington now when they get to present day?
I think they're trying to say 21, 22.
Yeah, I
but
would
he's
say
just
he's
too
in
old
his
for
20s
it.
Here.
He doesn't pull it off at all. You were in Coupling. But that was ages ago.
But they would totally, I mean, you know. That's true, but they would do that back then. They're like, he's, you know, you're 18, he's 40, it's perfect.
Yeah.
Exactly, it's fine. But the other thing is Jonathan Pryce. Oh, Jonathan Pryce.
Yeah.
Jonathan Pryce.
Brazil.
Although he
Jonathan
kind of
Pryce.
Reminds me of Fozzie from Muppet Treasure Island in this movie.
Oh, hey, my umbrella.
It's
I left it out here on the way out.
It's a parasol.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, is there a difference between an umbrella and a parasol?
Parasol is if you're from a Spanish-speaking country.
Ah.
I think parasols
actually
don't really protect you from the rain. They're just to block the sun.
Well, they're for the sun.
Paper umbrellas.
As the name says, they're for the sun. But parasol.
Yeah.
We're smart.
Yes. Or paraguas would be the Spanish version of the umbrella.
I hate us. Etymology is stupid.
You know, I will say
just blew my mind just then. I'm like, that is what the name means.
That's right.
I believe
Paraguay gets his for some reason is named after an umbrella.
Huh.
Hey, I didn't know until very recently that Cuisinart is a shortening of cuisine art.
Yeah.
Ah.
Never put that together. Felt like a douchebag.
Does anyone feel like that they should have at least heard the flames from a while away? Like it just suddenly appears.
Yeah, that totally blows the reality of the movie for me.
This is a really This is a compelling cold open though. This is good stuff.
Yeah.
Although it's almost you could cut it out and you wouldn't need it. It's just here because they needed a cold open. You could just introduce the characters older and say when we were younger we bumped into each other because they literally explain the scene in different bits and pieces throughout the film.
It's almost not even necessary that they bump into each other here, but it does tell you the origin of why she has the locket.
It also educates you on the fact that they shouldn't be friends. They shouldn't be in love with each other because she is the governor's daughter and he's a commoner. And it gives their connection more gravitas than a Romeo and Juliet.
Excuse
thing.
Me. Yeah. She's the governor's daughter. Their love is forbidden like Romeo and Juliet.
What's odd about this opening, though, is it feels like, you know, a missing scene from Master and Commander. It's like, this is so much more grounded and real than you kind of were thinking this movie was going to be.
This movie allowed me to be a big fan of Master and Commander. It allowed me to be interested in that kind of thing.
Because you're like, it's a theme park ride. You come in and you're like, oh, no, it's a movie.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
And it's
you can't do that movie.
Yeah. Wait a second, movie. You can't be a movie.
And so they gradually, you know, and again, in a thing that, seems like it shouldn't have worked, but they gradually take this real world and then turn it into this, you know, it gets proceedingly more bizarre and more and ultimately supernatural. And it's like, and yet somehow the stages of the process feel okay.
It handholds you through that. And part of what helps is, again, kind of the lantern hanging, because at every step, there's a character going, what the fuck?
Yeah. Wait, Ghost Pirates? I'm out. What? What are you? I did not sign up for Ghost Pirates.
And there's the Black Pearl, which became part of the title, like, midway through. I remember when this was just
the Black Pearl.
Pirates of the Caribbean, then it became...
They figured out halfway through it was going to be a franchise.
Yeah.
Like, there was enough dailies where they finally went, we're going to make a lot of money with this.
Yes. And then they went next door and they saw the Haunted Mansion dailies, and they said, we're going to make even more money with this.
Yeah.
Because this has got Eddie Murphy in it. It can't possibly fail. He's huge at the box office.
I'm just waiting for the Teacups movie.
No, it's a small world. I mean, that was the joke. It's like they're going to do It's a Small World next, and we're all going to kill ourselves.
I think they should make a movie out of that Pinocchio ride.
There's a thought.
Mr. Toad's Wild Ride would be a kind of, you can make an upsetting movie out of that.
Yeah, right.
That's the ride that fucked me up.
Yeah, but let's not call it Toad. Let's call it something about trees.
I really like the way this movie is shot. It manages to be kind of connect. You see a lot of... A lot of shots that are kind of moving, but not to the extent that Michael Bay does it, you know?
Like, open the door and let the matte painting in.
Yeah, exactly. But it'll You know, there's shots that'll just start on like a detail of the set and then pull out just to kind of let you know where you are and stuff like that. It's a very cool the way this movie is shot. I remember one of the things I enjoyed going back and seeing it again and again was really studying, like, how do they shoot this? This is really well put together.
And again, for me, it's like I always come back to how fast this came together. I mean, you know, you don't. Just these costumes. I mean, just getting these costumes together. Yeah, you can rent a few, but, you know, mostly it's going to be costumes.
No, most of the cast is British. I think they just have them.
They just own them. Yeah, they're issued them at birth, I think.
Just like all of us have PBR cans and hats.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel like it's the like this movie was the drunk guy at the blackjack table that doesn't realize just how much money he stands to possibly lose and yeah. then wins and everyone hates him?
Yeah, wait, it's a pirate movie?
That's a good analogy. I'll take that.
Thank you.
I mean, the
so who's the cocktail waitress?
Yeah. The art direction.
Michael Eisner.
Art direction, the production design, the costume design. You know, it's everything is phenomenal in this movie. And, you know, just that doesn't happen easily. And it doesn't normally happen fast.
Right here. This is how we define saving a cat.
Yeah, this is his
right off
the
bat.
Moment.
He fucks up something in an expensive place and tries to hide it so he doesn't get in trouble.
Yeah, there you go.
Cat saved. Moving on.
Cat saved. Yeah. Orlando Bloom.
We like you because we've all done retarded things like that ourselves.
Beautiful use. Anyway, this movie gets everything. Is it Terry Rossio and Ted Elliott?
Yes.
Is it just that they are that good?
So, Terry Rossio, Ted. Yes, yes.
Well, is it just them? Is that what?
I think. Well, they are very good.
There's
I think.
A story here. A story takes place in this film.
Yeah, there's a lot of. I mean, they've got their website WordPlayer, and they talk about the process and stuff, and they're very open about it, and they're very open because they're attached to some bombs too.
Yeah.
And they talk about how Namely? That happened. Godzilla.
They wrote Godzilla.
Yes, or they wrote a draft of Godzilla. And the
laptop started talking.
Okay. It's haunted.
Yeah, it's the haunted laptop. But
anyway,
wait, hold sorry. On. So get me a meeting.
Yeah.
Hold everything. Yeah.
So one of these two guys. Now that we're looking at Guybrush Threepwood up here.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Monkey Island.
Okay. I'm gonna guess it was Terry Rossio, but I don't know for sure.
So
he's the one who seems to go off on his own more than Ted Elliott.
I have a question from the ignorant person.
Go ahead.
What's Monkey Island?
Monkey Island.
Oh my god.
There's a franchise of games out from LucasArts back in the early '90s,
yeah,
I wanna say. Curse of Monkey Island, Escape from Monkey Island, The Treasure of Monkey Island, all those.
And they're great.
Which is about Guybrush Threepwood, who wants to be a mighty pirate and is in love with the governor, but is being constantly pursued by an undead pirate. And yeah. It's all about their adventures. And basically, at one point, they wanted to make a Monkey Island movie, and one of the guys that was hired to write that was one of the guys that ended up writing this movie. And I am sitting here going, George Lucas is going to sue somebody. But they never did.
So this is the Benjamin Button to Monkey Island's Forrest Gump?
Yes, maybe.
Have you noticed that they're the exact same movie?
No.
But
look, trust me on this one.
Yeah.
Anyway, look, it's Jack Sparrow.
Except he's unoldening instead of just retarded.
Yeah, if you played it backwards, maybe.
Yeah.
No, it's the same thing.
But
although I get what you're saying.
I do also like this is a great reversal here of you think he's awesome and badass, and then it's like, oh, he sucks, actually.
Yeah.
And that's awesome that
he's
you know,
a loser.
Yeah, you think he's going to be the hero of the piece. That's how it's been you know, shown to you in the trailers and stuff like that. And then you look at this, you're like, what? it makes his character instantly more interesting. Because you're like, wait, first of all, I know I've seen him being cool in the trailers.
Yeah.
So how does he get there? And secondly, this is the hero of the movie? I mean, obviously, this is actually an ensemble piece. It's hard to pick a hero. It's him and Will and Elizabeth all kind of have their hero's journey in this movie. And really, Will or Elizabeth more than Jack.
Jack's the anti-hero. He's basically Han Solo.
Well, yes.
How many movies have you seen that have used the trope where the first time we meet the hero of the group, it's waking him up and he's hungover?
That's true.
Fairly common.
That's true. It's fairly, and we,
this is hysterical.
This is that.
Just, he's like, nope, I'm going to go in with dignity no matter what it takes.
Well, that's what ultimately endears you to the character.
Yeah.
He never loses his sense of, you know, he's definitely the hero in his own movie in his mind.
Yes, yes.
No matter what's going on. You know, he's Bugs Bunny. It's like he can't get him down no matter what.
Exactly. He's like you say, he never loses his sense, even though he's, you know, drunk and unstable, he never loses his sense of poise in the sense where he's like, all right, I may not look it, but I am better than this. And I'm going to fake it till I make it, basically. There was a little bit earlier, speaking of camera work, like when he was walking back up to the guy, the camera got bumped. Like you could see it be
I saw it shake, yeah.
Yeah, and it's I don't know. That's another thing that just endears me because later they had all the time and money and they're like, nope, do it again. And it's so clean and perfect and stuff like that. And it's like, But except for the story, it didn't make any sense.
What was the budget for this?
This, I think,
like
was
95,
like,
something like that?
I would say 70 off the top of my head, but I'm probably wrong. I'll look that up.
I thought it was something like it cost 95 and it made 75 or something like that.
No, this made
money. American gross in theaters was like, it lost money in theaters.
I don't think that's
what?
I
don't believe it did.
No movie that I go to
someone
see three
said
times
that
in the
earlier,
theater lost
someone
money.
Said that earlier today. Someone said it
that
made
was
75.
Haunted Mansion. They were talking about Haunted Mansion.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Haunted Mansion was 90, made 75 domestic.
Okay, yeah. So what was this one in terms of cost?
I'm looking at
it. It was right a now. Little compared to a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was the anti-Haunted Mansion.
Ah.
And of course, you know, people always go, oh my God, studios are so stupid for spending $100 million on a movie. But that's studio accounting. Is they only need like one or two of these every year, and that offsets all the bombs,
right?
You know, and so you know that when a studio gets in trouble is when none of their $100 million movies make their money back. But if they get one or two per year, they can stay in business.
In the chat, Matt says $140 million.
Yeah, made or cost?
Well, he doesn't say. I'm assuming made.
What good is Matt? Specify, Matt.
Yep, he's right. According to Box Office Mojo, the budget was $140 million. And the worldwide gross was $650 million, which actually is not...
That's not huge.
Huge money.
I could do better.
I'm not surprised
it cost...
You guys
have been spoiled by Lord of the Rings.
I'm not surprised it cost $140 million, though, which, of course, at the time was like, wait a minute, because that would have been one of the most expensive movies
that's
ever made.
Pirates 2 made over $1 billion, as I recall.
Weirdly enough. Yeah.
Damn.
You know.
Damn.
But, you know, you can easily see where the money goes because, first of all, they're shooting on the water. Stupid.
Yeah.
First of all, don't ever do that.
Never.
Full-scale sailing ships, you know. Yeah, just get a sailing ship back to its mark and let's go again. That's
dozens of extras per shot, sometimes hundreds.
Full costumes.
All in costumes.
And then ILM doing a Rush 911 effects job.
Yeah.
You know, it's like what other things could you have to make a movie cost more money? Child actors and animals.
Jim Carrey.
And Jim Carrey.
There's a great way.
That's why Haunted Mansion costed so much.
Yeah. There's a great way that they're doing to get out the exposition and backstory of the Black Pearl.
Making it a comedy bit.
Yeah, by making it into a comedy bit and arguing about like the tall tales and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, it's also a character thing because he's like, well, while they're arguing,
the chubbier of the two of them looks like he could be Neville if he was like 10 years older and fat.
Yeah.
Look at him. He's got Neville face.
And these two are so nervous because they've never even met a guy that they might possibly have to shoot in their entire lives.
Well, it's the kind of thing where they're so unnerved by his confidence. They're like, seriously, you're just doing this right in front of us.
What
and we have guns.
What does he know that we're not getting?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's the Bugs Bunny thing. I'm just going to talk my way out of anything that happens.
Yeah.
Well, it's the rule at movie studios. If you want to look like you know what you're doing, don't talk to anyone and carry a clipboard.
That's right.
You can get into anything.
Yeah. Just have attitude. It's all about the attitude. Get out of my way. I'm doing important things that you don't know about.
And if you stop me, you risk being fired.
Take the chance.
A similar in reverse thing. And one of the reasons I think Orlando Bloom works really well in this one in a way that he doesn't so much in the others is the way he's playing the character as it goes to kind of what you've said a couple of times, Trey. The idea of, you know, becoming is more interesting than being.
Yeah.
He's learning to be confident. So he starts out, you see kind of the nerves in his face every time he talks to Elizabeth and all that stuff. And he's playing that really well and really subtly. And, you know, in the later ones, he becomes, I am an action hero just like Johnny Depp. I'm getting as much screen time as him, goddammit. And, you know, he becomes, you know, the main character. He's realized, you know, I'm an important part of this franchise, and he starts doing it. Whereas here, there is no franchise, so everyone's like, I'm going to play my character as the best version of my character that I can, and that's what makes it interesting, because even the bit parts are interesting, but they also recognize that they're kind of bit parts and part of a larger whole, whereas later on, you know, the two pirate, Abbott and Costello guys, they just become their own thing, and they kind of steal the scene anytime they're in it.
Pentel and Rigetti?
I thought that was their name, yeah. Something like that.
Yeah,
I was like Pants and Rigetti or something, but yeah.
Joe Pantoliano and Spaghetti?
I just think of him as Lee Ehrenberg and the guy from The Office.
Mm. I love that moment when they're so chill and they're just chatting, and then the body falls into the ocean, and they're like, huh.
Now, this cut doesn't quite work. you don't see quite enough of it doing its thing to understand what happened.
Right.
I think if there was just a second more of it in the first shot of the flag going one way mm-hmm. before it flips over, then right. you'd get it. But I'll bet you they didn't have it.
Yeah.
I'll bet you that's just the flag went, uh-uh.
And another great save the cat moment, because why is Jack doing this? Why?
Because he's inherently good.
He exactly, but he doesn't stand to gain anything.
Oh, I was
so going to
say any port in the storm.
It does seem a little out of character for him.
Yeah, the moment, but he sees someone in trouble and he's like, well, you know, I'm not heartless. Like, yeah.
But
so.
this is the moment that allows Elizabeth and, in the end, by transition, Will, to trust him in situations where it's like, wow, we should not be trusting this guy. He's tried to screw us over, but you keep coming back to, well, he did save my life.
He did. Yeah.
There is something in there that tells him.
But then next time when you kind of count on him, he's going to go, oh, no, not this time. No.
Not this time. No,
no, I'm not going
to. I didn't have to. I thought you could get your way out of it yourself.
Yeah, he didn't. Yeah, exactly. He's like, it seemed clear to me that time you couldn't do it yourself.
Yeah.
But these other times, it seemed like you could figure it out because you were conscious.
This sucks so much.
Yeah.
You are so feeling for Jack in this moment.
Yeah. Because you're like, oh, he's actually kind of a decent guy and blah, blah, blah. And you're like, aw.
It's like a total ripoff of Titanic, of course.
but it also puts you in the mind of where you need to be to an extent with, you need to be on the side of the pirates. Certainly Jack.
But on the side
of, like, pirates are not all bad. You need to be against the good guys in a way here.
Perhaps most importantly, right off the bat, you have stakes. You know what's up. You know what they're doing and how illegal it is. And it also, you know, contains and sort of carries that with a really great line where it's one good deed cannot forgive a man for a lifetime of bad ones. And then Johnny Depp's like, it seems enough to condemn him. Mm-hmm. It's like, indeed. It's like, fuck. All right, pirates are going to get arrested. Got it. They cannot get caught. I'm on the market.
Yeah.
As it were. Oh, he's so adorable.
But this is also, and we'll be coming back to this in the sequels. Right now, everyone's like, God, what a loser this guy is. Who is this guy? And then later on, everyone in the universe is like, Sparrow!
Jack Sparrow!
So.
You mentioned Norrington, and we this came up. Another example that I can think of is, strangely enough, Batman, the second Batman movie, the
Dark Knight.
Dark Knight is. You know, the first Dark Knight movie, the first Batman Nolan movie, you know, everyone, you're learning, you know, Batman is becoming Batman. It's about becoming Batman. So Bruce Wayne is like, oh, okay, you're following the Bruce Wayne story. In the second movie, he's Batman.
Yeah.
And he's just Batman. And it's all about, he's already Batman, and he's Batman at the end, and he's Batman at the beginning, and everyone else. And so you have to give, the only arc in the second movie is a secondary character. Harvey mm-hmm. Dent has an arc, is the only one. And so they did the same in the sequel to this one. Norrington gets the arc in the second movie because everyone else is already set in stone. Their characters are like, well, now I am this character.
Right.
I became this character in the last movie. So Norrington gets the arc, strangely enough. And they gave him a hell of an arc. They knocked him all the way down to zero so that then he could, you know, redeem himself or not. So it's kind of an interesting, you know, I wonder what that call was like. Hey, we're going to have you in the second movie, and you won't gonna believe what we're going to make you do. You're going to be this drunken failure at the beginning. Oh, sweet. You know, I'm in.
This is also, you know, once again, it's a very interesting reversal because we're on Jack's side, and we're watching this, and we're like, wait, what is he doing now? Is he a good – I'm on his side, and I think I get what he's doing, but at the same time, I'm like, wait, is he actually bad? Then why did he do that?
But that's Jack Sparrow in a nutshell right there.
Exactly. It's like you can't figure out –
I'm sorry. Captain Jack Sparrow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somehow, despite the fact that he seems so completely like only half competent sometimes, like when he does shit like this, not really thinking his actions through – so somehow he simultaneously doesn't think his actions through and is still two steps ahead of everybody else.
Well, the joke is, and they started, you know, recycling the joke and having it, you know, he'll do this, I don't know if it's this movie or the sequel, but he does the same thing and completely fails.
Right.
You know? And they play the same joke where he's going to, you'll rue the day that you cross, you know, and then he totally eats it.
Uh-huh.
You know, they just make
that's
it.
He's the opposite of Sahara. In Sahara, where they're like, you know, that was totally not
There's
supposed
no
to work.
There's no way that judge should have worked. Yeah, then this one, it's like, did anyone see that? Because I am not doing that again.
Oh, yeah.
Wherever that comes from. That's the new one.
Coming,
yeah, that's in the trailer for the new one.
So again, I love the way he runs. Yeah. His hands are just out in front of him. Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
Like laps in the kitchen.
In those heels, darling, you try and run. I mean, it's not easy.
His hands are – that's probably true. His hands are manacled together. He's running at high speed. He's like, if I fall, the hands go first, whatever else happens.
So it's – yeah, it's – again, it's one of the weirdest, like, okay, you know, I can see why the studio was uncomfortable. Like, I just really, I don't know quite what's happening here.
Yeah,
but once with this character,
yeah, with the movie, you know, as movies almost always are being shot out of order, I'm sure it took a while until they were able to start seeing the movie strung together, where they're like, "Oh, I see."
But there are other performers. There are some other performers. The one that always the straight line in my mind that this connects to is Val Kilmer in Tombstone. Val Kilmer is Doc Holliday in Tombstone. Where you know, for the first 2 minutes, you're like, "Seriously, Val? That's what you're doing? You're doing that?"
And by the end of the movie, you're totally bought in.
You're totally with it. You're totally down with it. And it's okay. And there's another performance, too, I usually think is a third of the triumvirate of, you know, wow, that should not have, you know, it's probably like a movie. That totally shouldn't have worked.
It probably was also Johnny Depp.
Yeah, it probably was also.
The Joker?
The Joker.
No, the Joker,
see and you're like, no, I get
the
this.
The instant you're talking about the Nolan, you know, Heath Ledger, yeah, no, the instant he's on screen, you go, oh, my God, this is the best Joker ever.
Yeah.
You don't need more than a, you know, half a frame to get on board with that performance. But there's another, maybe it'll come to me.
I think maybe part of it is how much he just totally commits to it, where you're like, well, that's not the person I would have met. And what makes him interesting is, like, that is definitely not the kind of person I would have imagined in a Pirates of the Caribbean movie, but he is a person. He is very consistently, like, the character feels like a real person, and he's insane, but he feels like a real person that you can just get on board with the fact that, okay, that's who this guy is, and maybe he's in the wrong movie, but by God, he's here. And he's not in the wrong movie.
Whoever that is, he's that.
Yeah, exactly.
That's him, all right.
All right, you guys with the Pirates of the Caribbean and the Lord of the Rings movies, talk to me about Orlando Bloom. What's your read on Orlando Bloom?
She's also pretty. I mean...
Yeah.
Wait, I'm sorry, what?
He is pretty.
Orlando.
I always feel like he's...
He needs better
writing.
His
performance is always slightly out of breath. Like, he's always sort of just talking. Mm-hmm. I think he works better in Lord of the Rings because that plays to the strength of being an elf, and he's kind of weird. And this,
He doesn't talk much, though, in
Lord
of the Rings.
Yeah, like, yeah. I mean, he's just kind of... He's a fucking elf.
He just floats around.
But in this one... He really is just there to look pretty, for the most part.
Yeah.
And
does it admirably. And of course, he had some sword training, which paid off here. I mean, it was kind of a no-brainer to cast him in this. Kind of like, oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, he's the guy we should get.
Now,
yeah.
Let's talk about fucking Hans Zimmer, Inc. and Klaus Badelt, who I'm going to be giving the credit to for the remainder of this commentary. I love how the score matches the sword fight. Bum, bum, bum.
The music here is all throughout.
Every single hit of the swords is a cue in the music.
Yeah.
It's
a great scene on all levels. I mean, it's beautifully shot, and it's wonderfully choreographed, and it's just, you know, it's really fun.
The shooting shows off the choreography very well.
This scene is never shot this way without Die Hard. I just want
to
say that.
I don't like this, because the texture of the sword looks wrong to me for some reason. It doesn't look like metal. It looks like fiberglass.
It looks like painted
metal.
Rubber.
Well, I'm expecting a shiny sword, and that... See, it looks it looks like a prop to
they've
me.
They've got the it is a prop.
Well, I know,
it's like a cold iron technique, so it's not smooth. Because, you know, it doesn't have to be shiny. A sword just has to be pointy and sharp on one end. It doesn't have to be shiny. Shiny is for rich people.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I accept your point.
I think also... his performance as Jack, I think, probably helps everyone else's performance in the sense that...
You get to react to him.
Yeah, you get to react to him. And I can imagine every actor always just being completely on the back foot with him, being like, what is going on in this scene? And that really bringing out a reality in any interaction with him.
Later in the movie, Will is talking to Gibbs, and Gibbs is explaining how Jack got off the island and all that stuff. Not only did... Orlando Bloom come up with the line, so is that the reason for all the, and he does a little impression.
Yeah.
It was an inside joke.
Yeah.
He was cracking up the crew. He's like, oh, so is that why he's fucking doing this? Mm-hmm. And he did it to make the guys laugh. And Grover Benson was like, no, it's going to work.
That'll work. Yeah,
that'll work.
Take it.
Brent.
In.
Well, that's another thing where it's like, okay, all the other characters are aware that that's happening and it's weird, right?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Another little hanging a lantern for people that might not have been along for the ride or whatnot.
Yeah.
No, talking about acting and the idea of, you know, a lot of actors will say their line and then they just cue out. It's like, well, I've said my line and I'm not a part of the scene anymore.
And now I'll pause until it's my next line.
Yeah, exactly. No, one guy that always gets really good credit for being a really good, he's almost like a scenery prop because of how well he reacts, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah, he's good.
They always talk about how P.T. Anderson always puts him in the background of scenes.
Just so he's doing something?
Because he's always doing something.
Just to see him react to what
my favorites, and there's a long list of exceedingly great Philip Seymour Hoffman characters that he comes up with, these things. But the Gust Offergatos.
I was just going to say Charlie Wilson's War.
Charlie Wilson's War.
Favorite. Yeah, he's fantastic.
Excuse me, what
that.
The fuck?
Yeah,
you, so you Ponzi schoolboy.
So
yeah,
oh
water goes
God.
Over a dam and under a bridge. You Ponzi schoolboy.
I just he comes. That's the introduction
like
of the character.
Gunn was a little
he comes
socialized.
In with a giant Mario mustache and says, "Excuse me, what the fuck?"
Yeah.
Watch the trailer, then find the movie. It's worth it just to
Charlie
see
Wilson's
him.
War. We is worth watching in general.
Aaron Sorkin wrote it,
and Mike.
You've already
and,
sold me.
And Mike Nichols freaking directed it, and you know it was watching it and stars Tom Hanks. And how is it not a hit? Because it told us things we didn't want to know about Afghanistan. So you know,
how big is the department? It's three million. Guys.
Yeah.
Anyway, awesome, awesome, awesome.
Yeah,
I saw the other day ILM, I guess, is doing a video series like Google does where they have people come and talk at their facility and they just put those on YouTube. And there's a 10-minute clip series talking with Aaron Sorkin about the process of writing The Social Network. And it was interesting to hear what he was talking about because at one point someone said, "How do you do this?" And he says, "Look, you can read all the books you want or you can just have a character want something and put something in his way. Do that."
Yeah,
way
right.
easier.
Yeah. Or as I quoted Goldman and another William Goldman was talking about, he said, "Yeah, you want to know what you know how to tell a story? It's like, well, read The Little Engine That Could. Yeah. You know, it's like you know, it's like it's simplistically written for 5-year-olds, and you know, read that thing and tell me that you're not pulling for that fucking train to get those toys over the mountain. So that's screenwriting. Get the fucking toys over the mountain. That's what screenwriting is.
Yeah.
And so you know, it, and really, when you boil it all down, that is what it is. So it's like
it's also really interesting and fascinating because. That whole scene right there, it's like
here's the direct lift from one
yeah
of the
oh yeah there's
Bride,
like there's so
the
many
way.
Of these
they're
this
matching
got,
the
this,
pose
this yeah. got a knowing laugh in the theater from a few
oh yeah
people.
There's
anyway,
a lot
sorry,
of those there's definitely a lot of those moments where you're like what they managed to put that not they managed to put it in the movie
yeah.
And it worked.
Yeah.
But then that's fucking crazy.
And then three, they just hung a lantern on it because he goes that dog is never going to move.
Yeah, you yeah. can do that forever. That dog is never going to move.
Yeah. It's like, wow, that was a triple they just pulled off
yeah.
there. Gutsy move.
By the way, there's a very good chance your bed might be on fire in the next 5 minutes.
Yeah, here's the thing. That's not how this fucking works. You put that in the bed and take it out before you get in so it's warm. You don't put the fiery metal in the bed next to your feet. That's stupid. You're doing it wrong. Don't put the fire next to your feet. I say this again. Don't put the fire next to you put it in the bed earlier. I can't believe it.
Yeah. Why aren't they just using an electric blanket?
Yeah,
God.
Seriously.
Oh, you gossipy strumpet. To the gallows with you.
Yes. Strumpet.
Strumpet.
Nice use. Nice,
nice.
Use.
Thank you.
That's
a word that should come back.
Yeah.
Because God knows we have
I'm bringing it back.
Bringing strumpet
think,
back.
I think they
I'm bringing
that.
Strumpet back.
I think they use that in this movie.
Yeah, I think they do.
They already have.
Are you thinking of
they already did use the word.
No, they use poppet, too.
Poppet is, you know,
they use a number of those words in here where it's like, that doesn't feel forced. That just feels right.
She
and it's been forever since I heard that word, but
poppet.
that belongs there.
She gets called poppet so much, they might as well just have her in the screenplay as that.
As poppet.
Poppet. Yeah. Poppet runs to Will Turner.
No.
Well, that's the Lee Ehrenberg thing. I mean, Lee Ehrenberg, he's the one who keeps calling her Poppet. That's his little recurring thing.
Where else have we seen
but
Lee
of course
Ehrenberg.
He does, like, the
you've seen him in
way.
A lot of things. You just haven't seen him with all that much hair on him. I worked with Lee on Freaked, of all things. He was the Eternal Flame in Freaked and a very nice guy, a very cool guy. He was in The Crow, and I've already told my Crow story, I think, on another commentary.
You told that one on Hitchhiker's Guide.
Yeah, so...
well, that makes sense.
How that came up, I forget. But,
yeah.
Oh, because we were talking about The Office or something. I don't know. But and of course, the other fellow, like I said, this whose name I don't get, but he's the Dwight of the original British Office. Characters was a different name, but he was the you know annoying dude that the main character was the foil of.
I think the character's called Garrett.
Garrett. That sounds right. Yeah. So,
I know those guns the way that a car freak talks about an engine with a car passing by.
Exactly.
Oh, that's a 5.1 Mustang GT. Oh, and they added on the double carb on the exhaust.
You know, I don't remember where I read this, but
you didn't even fake having joke knowledge earlier.
Yeah, no,
I don't remember where I read this, but actually, there were some studies that show that like car enthusiasts. It's at the point, like, most people, they just look at a car and they, like, recognize it as a car and stuff like that. But car enthusiasts, when they look at a car, it actually activates the same part of their brain that's usually reserved for face recognition.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
really?
that's how specific their knowledge becomes, that they can tell the difference between cars the same way that most people can tell the difference between faces.
Those people...
Well, I'm sure it's probably the true, whatever you're an enthusiast of.
I'm sure,
you know, that it's because it's... it's using that part.
That's, oh, no, no, that's no, no, no. Car enthusiasts are freaks.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with them. Yes. Whereas people who can endlessly quote from movies are perfectly normal and acceptable.
Yes, exactly.
That's always... I love that cliche. I don't... It's just this weird cliche of... okay, by the way...
There they are.
Yay!
Yeah, see that thing that he's making right now? Apparently that's been around for like 200 years and is the sigil of a pirate king or something.
Wait, what?
In the third movie, but yeah. We'll get back to that.
Oh, yeah. Right.
I just wanted to call it out. I'm like, see that shot where he's making it?
No, he was
just so
he
we're
was
clear.
Just flicking off a little burr, right. So that he could turn his eye without hurting himself.
So here's another homage to the ride, yeah. Basically the sacking of Port Royal.
Yeah, which is now like no longer really even in there.
Well, they've changed it because they used to be chasing women, and now they're chasing. Yeah, you know, they politically correctified.
Yeah.
It all.
Now, they used
even though
be,
they're still selling women at one point.
Yeah, yeah. It's still a slave auction, but
they,
it's not
they
fair
used
to chase
be,
them.
Yeah, they used
you
to
can
be,
sell them, but you can't catch them in the wild. They've been domesticated now, and let's get that straight.
Exactly. There's a poaching limit here.
Yeah, no, because they're endangered.
They're apparently. Not selling them for sex. Yeah,
once wenches yeah. were on the endangered
well,
list.
To their dishes.
Well, that's exactly the thing. Before, what they did was, before it used to be that they were chasing them around to... catch and rape them,
presumably,
and
now they
presumably.
Have food,
and now they have now trays they, of food, so they're food. Chasing.
No,
them to
because
eat the food.
They still have the woman, the very nice woman out of all of it, and you can hear show them your larboard.
No,
but that's that.
Still
yeah,
the
yeah,
slave
yeah.
auction,
yeah.
but that's a different.
The slave
scene.
Auction is still there, okay. but the chasing in a circle, and then yeah. they have the big woman who's still who's, chasing.
You guys
guy.
Know the fuck out of that ride.
We were just there a while ago. We have like
well, of course, now it's been updated, so Jack Sparrow's in the
now it's updated. So again, not only is Jack Sparrow in the ride, but every damn person is like, "Have you heard Jack Sparrow's in town? Jack Sparrow, Jack Sparrow." Jack Sparrow. It's like
and then
the other thing.
And then the Jack Sparrow. When you find, yeah, you know, it's one of the you know really the new generation figures. Where it's like, is that just Johnny Depp? Just like
yeah.
sitting there. It's freaky.
Those are really good.
What's they're called? The active response. Something like there. That.
Well, the I don't know if they still call them the Sarcos. Was a separate company that based out of it. At the, you know, and again, these companies change and they change names and the patents get sold off to different places. But Sarcos, and they were based out of Salt Lake City when I went to go see them, and they had active compliance was the big breakthrough at that point.
And that's where you like push it and it kind of moves.
It's hydraulics, but it's hydraulics that actually has give to it. So like when you program a robot to, you know, raise your arm, it kind of goes clang. But active compliance has this sponginess to it, so it's more like a person moves its arm. It moves up, but then it kind of has its own little bounce and recoil to it.
Which happy accident is perfect for Jack Sparrow's characterization.
Yeah, I know.
Because like, he's just sort of floaty. He's just like...
So you can, you know, you get so much more free animation out of it because you can make the body shift from one side to the other, and all the... appendages and the arms and fingers, everything kind of go like a person really does, and you don't have to program that.
In the chat, Braden says they took Johnny Depp out to the ride after it was completed. It apparently was an Uncanny Valley thing, and he freaked out a little bit.
I'm sure. Yeah, I would imagine
he's like,
so.
I am so glad that they did that gag right there, the whole thing of taking the sword off and fighting with it, because that it just never had made any sense to me that you'd actually have an actual... Just, it's decorative.
Yeah.
It's not going to work.
Yeah, exactly. You think it's... But no. Oh, damn.
Damn
it's
it.
Just a
nope.
thing.
I'm boned.
This isn't a real sword at all. Damn it. All this time, I thought. It worked in Gremlins, but not here. In Gremlins, they have real swords, but here she didn't.
But I love again, that little reaction. And it turns into, like, they're saying witty dialogue later, but just... That little moment is one of the funniest things. He's like, "We're not going to hurt you." The other guy's like, "Huh?" And the guy's like,
"It's something we say,
it's
all right."
And he's like, "Oh,
I got you."
And it's all completely nonverbal, but it's like that's one of the funniest exchanges in this entire movie.
Yeah. Oh, we're using code names.
Yeah. Way back in the day, we were all on the same message board for Star Wars fan films, and there was a thread made. Right after this movie came out, comparing users on the fan films board to various people. And I forget who was who, but I know that Dorkman and Chris were on it.
I was Norrington.
You were Norrington. I don't remember what you were, but I was the pirate that hates parlay.
Yeah, you were Patel.
It sucks.
I can't remember which one's which. Does it really matter?
No. Pintel is is Lee Ehrenberg, and Rigetti is the tall guy.
Rigetti's the tall guy. Okay.
He's the one that looks like spaghetti.
Ah,
there you
that's
go.
That's one of the mnemonics you could use. He also looks like a rag doll.
Anyway,
Rigetti,
horrible joke.
Wah wah. If you look up Lee Ehrenberg, just you know, IMDb him, you'll see he's been in all kinds of stuff. He's one of those that guys.
He's that guy.
Yeah.
Oh, there he is. That guy.
He's that guy. It's just that he doesn't look at all like he looks here. The hair especially. He was bald and freaked. And it's like, oh wait. For a second I was like, who's that guy? Oh, that's Lee. Oh, okay.
What is it about Orlando Bloom that always... He looks like a puppy.
Mm-hmm.
He just moves and looks like a puppy.
That's why he works in a movie like this where he's supposed to be like the innocent coming out of his shell, whereas later he's the badass and it's like, no, you're still like, I can still tell when they say cut.
Look how cute. He thinks he's people.
Exactly.
I can just imagine that's how Gore got good performance. He just rubbed it behind his ears and action.
Good shot. Now, good shot. Supposedly that shot was actually done on the ride.
Mickey
like
Mouse.
It pans up to the, you know,
I don't buy it. I've seen that trivia. I don't think that's
forced. I don't think that's the actual shot that they're referring to, though. There's a different
one. If there's a different one, what we're talking about is that there is a
hidden
longstanding
Mickey.
Piece of trivia that there's a hidden Mickey, which is a thing. At Disneyland, you can find hidden Mickeys everywhere and in some Disney movies.
and you can find them even if they're not there.
Right. And that's what I, and if that was the shot that they're like, oh, hidden Mickey, I'm like, nope. You're just a little too eager. It might show up later, though.
It's kind of like the good mirror universe of the people that look for the word sex in all of the Disney movies.
Yeah.
It's the reverse of that. It's people looking for, you know, hidden good stuff.
Well, sometimes people try and justify something like, well, yeah, see the way that shot is blah, blah, blah. It's like, no one is insane enough to have done that.
Yeah.
I mean, what is the
that
point
said,
of doing it that way?
What was it, the Great Mouse Detective? Is that the one I'm thinking of? Where there's
they're
flying past through
the
little plane and they're flying
the rescuers.
Past.
The rescuers. Rescuers down under. We were just talking about that the way.
No, the original.
It's the original where they take off in the plane.
They pass by some buildings and in one of the windows for two frames. One frame it's over here, next frame it's over there, and then it's gone.
It's pornography.
Just a picture of porn.
It's not porn. It's a nude woman, which is not porn. But
okay, it's for the purposes of a Disney film.
Pornography is in the eye of beholder, Mr.
Yeah,
Stokes.
So and you're a Quaker apparently.
here's where it gets interesting. Where you're like,
yeah,
wait,
we're like, wait,
whoa,
yeah. and so he says, well, that is interesting, isn't it?
He's like, oh, so that curse thing everyone's talking about. That is a thing.
I'm glad I'm here.
Yeah.
And he's like, I could use this to my advantage. Yeah. Ghost Pirates, awesome.
I don't know how, but by God, one way or another, I can make this work.
And right about here is where this movie is so much more epic than I thought it was going to be when I first saw it. I was like, this is a huge freaking movie.
And we haven't even seen Jeffrey Rush yet.
Yeah, and it's just it's massive. Just that, you know, making, as we all know, just from, you know, it's hard enough to get three people in a room and put a camera on them. Let's get 500 people on a real boat in period costumes with a cannon fire at night. What do you say? I say about 140 million. Done. This is, you know, a huge movie. And it works. You know, it's actually, you know, Gore Verbinski, the Mouse Hunt dude, you know, managed to make an epic movie that was appropriately epic. And there he is.
Yeah.
And he just saved a cat.
Sorta.
He has a weird...
The
thing the movie does is with Sparrow and with Barbossa and with the parlay thing is, like, they do have, like, well, pirates are pirates, but there's the code. They have the code. That's how you can kind of... That's what separates the good pirates from the bad pirates, is the good ones at least follow the code.
And... Right here, Barbossa, he plays along for a little while, and then he's finally like, nope, I'm actually smarter than you, believe it or not. So I outwitted you here. You know, I win for a little while. Try again later.
Why do they care if she drops it? Why do they all go, oh, no?
Because they'd have to go find it.
Well, and what does
they
it
have
do
to find it, but
other
they,
than send off a shockwave when it hits the water?
No, they have to. This is actually central to the plot. They have to find all the pieces.
Oh, it's one of the gold pieces.
Yeah, it's one of the gold pieces.
There you go.
But if she drops it, they can go to the bottom.
Yeah,
of the,
they can take a walk to the bottom.
It might be kind of hard, like, you know, trying to find a contact lens on a basketball court.
Yeah.
Well, of course, she doesn't know. I mean, I think the way the scene is going, they're kind of like, it's not that big a deal. It's annoying.
But now she knows.
They just panicked a little bit. They're like, so who cares? Whatever. And she's like, oh, okay. And they're like,
but still, it's like, well, it's not. We just go down there and walk around till we find it.
I really do love his performance as Barbossa in this film, though. He's like so weird and affected, but it works perfectly for the character. He's got this sort of insanity to him, but. He's always trying to like keep up with where Jack is just by pure accident.
Well, we talked about this in another movie not that long ago about how, you know, as crazy and cheesy a movie as you're making, if you can convince a really good actor to show up,
right?
Sometimes you get just something amazing.
Yeah,
out
he'll
of
class
it.
The joint right up.
He totally classed it.
Which of course is what Bill Nighy did with Davy Jones as well, but we'll get to that.
For no kidding, but And then and you were saying we can make the movie more expensive? Yeah, monkey. Yep, there's a monkey with key things that he has to do.
Because if it was a parrot, we would all hate them.
That's true.
What?
That would have been annoying. Well, of course, if you ever spent more than 3 minutes in the company of a parrot, you immediately go, I'd rather have a monkey or anything than whatever the hell this thing is.
Birds are very loud.
And my favorite line.
Guidelines and rules?
Yeah. Yeah. We quote that thing so often.
Well, I liked it when it was in Ghostbusters.
Yeah. I just like the bit where she thinks she's outsmarting him. He's like, nope. First of all, we didn't get that in writing. Second of all, it doesn't actually count. I was just playing along. And third, even if it did, fuck it.
Phoenix Wright pops out of anywhere and goes, objection!
You have to ask for absolution, asshole.
This is bullshit. Can you imagine being in this world where they have a 8-foot by 10-foot map? How much does that map cost to get across the ocean and out here to get it made in the first place, to get it printed accurately and all the little words on it? And he comes up, throws a little pissy fit, knives it.
Yeah.
Puts a hatchet right in the center of it.
Well, that's to show just how upset he is.
You knived.
I think he's just being an asshole.
You knived my map. Damn you.
Everyone does that all the time. They get pissed off and they're like, we're going there. And they stab the map with their knife.
Why do you have to stab the map?
It's going to make it harder to find. Now we've destroyed the area with the coordinates. We can figure it out, but if we keep doing that.
We should update that and have it happen with like an iPad. Yeah. Like you got Google Maps open. We're going here. Clang. Yeah. Could you not do that with the dagger? That would be so much better. Give me another iPad.
Yeah. All right, you're paying for that.
You're totally paying for that.
That's the out of the scene. Yeah. Just you're paying for that.
Here's where we're going. Clank. Oh, sorry. I thought it was.
Sorry. I'm used to the map.
I forget. Digital. Right.
I like. I like that connection right there between Norrington and Turner because it shows that Norrington's at least human and not this flat military guy. He's like, look, dude, I sympathize with you, but guess what? I'm getting that booty.
You're not helping.
Yeah.
And we had a map a second ago. So just get the fuck out. Right.
Now I have to get another map. So if you'll excuse me,
give me about 10 months.
Yeah,
and we're gonna lose a bunch of sailors.
Don't sail towards that hole in the map. We'll fall into the ocean.
Oh my God!
That's where the big knife
Owen
comes
found
down.
The TFN Pirates cast thread.
Oh God.
Oh dear.
Right.
Who's who?
I'm finding someone. Thank you, Owen. Let's see here.
And now, like, three people in the audience and the four of us are not going to care about the next 3 minutes of discussion.
There's a person in this room who doesn't know what the hell you're referring to.
Barbosa is Hanel. Will Turner is Ryan.
I'm Barbosa? I thought I was Norrington.
Nope, you're Barbosa. Ryan Weber is Will Turner. Dorkman Scott is pirate number 3. I'm the pirate that hates parlay, so what up?
Yeah, you are. Yeah. No, wait, he's pirate number 3? What?
You're not even a real thing, dude. Sorry.
No, I'm the cool pirate number 3.
Yeah, the good one, though.
The black dude that slapped Elizabeth.
Okay, and
the lovable one.
And if we could just back up a sec, and what the hell are you talking about? What is this?
There was a thread on the Force.net fan film boards where someone said, if we were to recast Pirates of the Caribbean with TFN fan film forum members, who would they be?
I see.
Who was Trey? Was Trey on the list?
I don't think I was.
Trey's not on the list.
I'm not as well known. I don't post that much.
Yeah, but
so
Trey
is
totally a Samantha.
I'm not an... I would be the governor, I think. I think I'd be the, you know.
I still insist that Jack Sparrow is you slowed down.
I was wondering if that was going to come up.
Oh, for sure. You thought I wasn't going to bring it up? Sparrow on caffeine is Trey Stokes.
Yeah, okay.
I did that impression.
I get more chicks, though?
Yeah, it's Celebration 4. I did it for like 30 people, and I got a big reaction out of it.
I actually have seen the impression of me via Jack Sparrow a la Chris Hanel, and it's like, okay.
Not to brag, but it's a sight to behold.
It is like it was quite striking.
There was the moment there. Speaking of Jack, kind of slowing down. There's a moment where he's talking with Will, and he realizes who Will is, and it's the first time that he hasn't been kind of a total spaz. And he's like, "Will, that's an interesting name. Probably named after your father, right?"
Yeah.
And he's like, "Yeah." And there's just he doesn't move. He just goes, and he's just looking at the ground. And he's like. Uh-huh. All right, change your mind. Like, and it's like, because that's the only moment that Jack has been still, it's like, oh, something is going on here. Without having to tell us what. Okay, the physics of this, not so much as Mythbusters.
Yeah, has pointed out. The
idea that
I saw this in Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah, that you can't, the air trapped under it would float you. You wouldn't actually be able to walk.
Yeah. Which makes me ask the question, how did they shoot it?
I imagine it's not full of air. I imagine they're probably just on scuba gear or something.
Oh.
Oh, wow. Someone said, I think Chris Hanel would be good for Will Turner, apart from the whole sex appeal thing.
Wow.
Snap.
This is why we can't have nice chat rooms.
By the way, these posts come from December 23rd, 2003, in the wee hours of the morning.
Well, then I guess figures. I agree with the statement.
See, why weren't you guys out in line to see Haunted Mansion?
I don't know.
They'd just come out in November, so surely the lines were still forming.
The true fans
they were
saw
not
it
still
at midnight,
forming, and
Trey.
Don't call me Shirley. If I quote enough movies, the internet will love me.
This is a really good moment because it's one of those things where it's like I could see a lesser movie just going, yeah, they totally take the Dauntless. The two of them sail off. Mm-hmm. But they turn into this whole plot that actually kind of works. Mm.
This guy is such a cock. I rarely describe people as cocks because that word is a very specific personality.
And he
is a cock.
And he just cocked his pistol. So
you'll never make it out
thing.
Of the bay.
Num, num, num.
It's like, and then you.
All right, now check this guy out. The really, really handsome guy that's with Norrington has a crush on Jack Sparrow the entire series. Watch for it. It keeps happening.
Yeah.
He starts off sort of like, oh, that's interesting. And then later he's like, that's the best pirate I've ever seen. And then the third movie, he's like, I will straight up let that dude brick on my face.
Yeah.
Watch for it. It's in the film.
He says it.
His words, not mine. Additionally, he is fucking amazingly handsome.
Maybe he's Figwit in Lord of the Rings.
I agree.
Is he Figwit? He's not Figwit?
Oh.
No. Lord of the Rings? No.
No.
Don't recognize
you probably that. Don't even know who I'm talking
about. By the way,
we
just passed that shot of when Jack Sparrow turns around and smiles, which was the wallpaper of every woman on the planet for about 2 years.
Yeah.
Oh, look at that smile.
Pirate.
Yeah. I love that bit where he's like, yeah, but we got a ship now, so it's cool.
Yep.
This is so clever.
Yeah, that's like, the thing. It's like it's not based on stupid movie logic, mm-hmm. at least to a large degree.
I mean, it's you want Steve Zahn to go, there's no way that should have worked, but at least, well, it's a viable
plan. They didn't
plan.
Jump the Interceptor over the Grand Canyon and escape into the wind.
Yeah, exactly. They didn't like activate the rocket engines, which apparently his crazy uncle inventor had attached to them or anything like
no,
that.
No, it's not R2-D2.
And I love also the fact that everyone's been... The setup is, as well, everyone's like, that is the fastest ship in the entire Navy. So he's like, oh, well, then obviously we should grab that one if we can.
Yeah, so we'll steal this one so we can get that one.
Get that one, and now we're in the fastest ship, so no one's going to be able to catch us.
It's kind of like, well, that's like well written. Who saw that coming in this movie? It's fun.
That doesn't belong here?
Yes.
Okay.
This is supposed to be a stupid thing based on a theme park ride starring a gay transvestite
guy. Who wants to play physics? Does the ship explode when the other ship taps it?
No.
The little boat gets bumped out of the way, and people go, hey, the boat hit us. They don't jump out.
No, it's being ground under. It's not exploding, but it's being pulled under.
Now, that guy just said...
that might happen, yeah.
But that guy just said that's the best part I've ever seen just after hearing a superior officer saying that's the worst part I've ever seen. I don't think I'd have the balls to... Yeah. I mean, that's basically just saying...
You
oh,
have
yeah,
never
well,
had a crush yeah. the yeah. size of this man's crush.
I think that's just basically, oh, yeah, Norrington? Well, fuck you.
It's like if when Kennedy announced we'll go to the moon.
Go on.
The guy next to him was like...
Yeah. Like, that's going to happen.
Guys, Jack's been drinking. Hold on.
It almost seemed like you hadn't thought that one through. Yeah. It was like when Kennedy announced...
No, I was trying to, remember the line, and it's, why does Rice play Texas? We choose to... okay.
Yeah.
All right, whoa. Someone, like, pulls him away. Stop.
That actually would be funny that there was a guy back over his left shoulder, slightly out of focus. He kind of goes... You can clearly see him mouthing, what the fuck?
Yeah. He just kind of rolls his eyes.
Yeah. He's always on about the goddamn moon. Jesus.
Oh boy!
I think I'm curious about the subtitles in this because
are they wrong?
I think they have
the
just
subtitles.
Misspelled Scallywag, and they had unless it's right out of the script. They had the weirdest spelling of the name Murtaugh earlier, which was like, are you just doing this phonetically?
Wait,
isn't Scallywag spelled Scallowag?
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe they were trying to.
Did they have some J's in it or something?
The subtitles just spell it Scallywag. Scallywag.
Oh.
And I. This is a great scene because you get where Jack is coming from and you're like, yeah, actually that, you know, that's the bad guy way of doing it, but it's also the smart way, you know? He's like, Will was like, in a fair fight, I kill you. And Jack's like, then why would I fight fair?
Yeah. We already left the joke, but there was a good line in the chat from Frank. He's like, the Speaker of the House is behind JFK just doing the jerk-off motion.
Well, I'm sure he was of the opposition
we
party.
Choose to go to the moon.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Again so anyway. With the moon. Someone just shoot this guy.
Whoa.
What, too soon?
No, actually, you're good.
Okay.
No, I checked. Statute of limitations.
Okay, we're clear. Okay.
We're coming up on the AIDS jokes too.
Okay,
we got those in like 3 years.
Oh, awesome! Because I got so many, I've been saving up.
I was worried when I saw that the first time. I was worried that we're going to do the skull thing here.
Yeah, it's going to be shaped like a skull.
No, stop.
Please. I love that it's just anarchy in the streets.
Well, this is another reference to the Red. Especially the backtrack right there.
We're a collective communist.
There's another one.
We're an autonomous collective. Every 2 weeks we meet, dude.
We take it in turns and sort of act as an executive officer for the week.
It has to be ratified by a council.
Yeah, with a majority vote in the case of purely internal affairs.
Shut up.
Okay, this is the one joke that I think comes back a few too many times.
Yeah.
The slapping and the thing. Well, it's such a trailer moment that they have to have one in every movie. It's a good joke.
Then just film it and don't put it in the movie and just say, "Oh, we cut it."
It was shape.
Yeah, this is fun. It's just in this movie, I'm like, well, no, it's only like three times in this movie.
There's another.
Rule of threes. But it's
right. No, right.
Sleeping with the pigs. Yeah.
Sleeping with the pigs.
And he's really sleeping with pigs.
Yeah.
Those are some big ass pigs.
Oh God, what did
and
he
not
say
in a metaphorical way?
What did
like
he say
London
when he woke up?
Century.
That was like one of my favorite things. I was like, I wanted to train myself to scream that whenever
mother,
I woke
mother's
up.
Mother's love? What?
Whatever he said.
I didn't catch it when he woke up.
Yeah, I missed it too.
Someone in the chat
figure out what it is that Gibbs says right when he gets splashed with water and wakes up.
Hey,
so
stop splashing me with water. Quit that.
That'll about do it. Now, I don't think.
Just for the hell of it.
Johnny Depp saves the joke because I don't think Orlando Bloom nails it. But Johnny Depp saves it with the whole, okay. Anyway, whatevs.
I think why that joke doesn't really land is because he sets it up with the, I'm already awake!
Matt Fedeveda says, curse you for breathing, you slack-jawed idiot!
That's the one. I love that.
Which sounds like something out of Firefly.
Yeah. No, because it would have been in Chinese.
I was going to do a Chinese Firefly line, but then I realized I can't say any of them.
I think any of Mal's lines from Firefly would sound great as read by Johnny Depp as Jack Sparrow.
Or Raoul Duke.
Time comes and naughty men won't be able to slip about anymore.
Oh, my God.
What?
Something like that.
I want to see that. I want to see.
Yeah?
Let's remake season one of Firefly with
Johnny Depp as Jack Sparrow as Mal.
Yeah.
I can't.
That would be like a nerd perfect storm.
Yes.
It'll never happen. You know why? Because it would mean that Nathan Fillion's not in Firefly and the entire internet would implode.
Half of the internet would go to war with the other half of the internet.
Like, I haven't seen arguments like this since Mike versus Joel.
Oh, my God. Here they come.
You know, I think Mike's really better than Joel in Ministry Studies. No!
In 1,000 years, it will be called the Great War.
The Great War. People talk about it like Vietnam.
The Crusades, even.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it'll be like the Futurama episode. That's why no one's ever heard of Pirates of the Caribbean or Mystery Science or Firefly.
Savvy is a Jack Sparrow invention. Or, I'm sorry, a Johnny Depp invention. That was one of his lines. Savvy.
Leverage. I love that show.
Well, he didn't invent the word, yeah. The use of the word.
But
it wasn't
in the script. He just turned that into his own catchphrase.
Yeah. There is a kind of a Firefly thing, because you're in this, like, this is a weird cross-cultural thing, you know? It's like these guys have these weird, and of course later they go deeper and deeper into it in the sequels, where it's like, you know, here are the Chinese pirates, and here are the Malaysian pirates, and here are the pirates from France, and you know, it's like, wow, okay.
They're the pirates from Silicon Valley.
Yeah, so we're the pirates of the Southern Caribbean, which is, we're like the Pirates of the Caribbean, but a little more spice in our food.
How was your soccer match against the Pirates of Northern Caribbean?
It was a draw.
Well, there was rioting, and then we played.
There was a riot, and then a soccer match broke out.
Yeah, soccer match
Final
broke
tally,
out.
14 injured, 3 dead.
It's like Blood Bowl. One person knows what that is in the chat room.
Just the amount of time these guys have to sit in the chair every day and get their teeth done.
Yeah.
To look like this.
Yeah, they're British. They had to work their way up.
Lee's not British, but the other fella.
And anyway, you know, it's cool. I'm glad. I'm proud of Keira Knightley because she's starting to not look like Natalie Portman anymore.
Yeah, well done.
Yeah, good for you.
Actually, I feel like that's a problem. It's like a medical condition. You don't look as much like Natalie Portman. How long do I have?
How long until
I look like Hayden?
You've got what we call Black Swan disease.
Black Swan, Black Pearl, Elizabeth.
Oh, Portman, it all makes too much sense.
Yeah. No, it was touch and go there clearly for a while. She was right on the bubble here.
Yeah.
It's like, wait a minute.
I love that everything's moving around, and he's like pouring wine, but moving with the glass because
nice
he knows
touch,
how it's
yeah.
going and stuff.
Well, he's no landlubber,
and the
lubber.
That's what I said.
And the way he's getting off on her eating right here. He's like, eat that next. Eat it!
I like how they saved the sexy weirdness of the moment just by having a cut of the monkey being
the monkey kind of going, don't eat. I regretted eating the apple myself. Don't do it.
The monkey's like, bad dates.
don't eat that apple. And it's only, but it is only with the apple. That's about the same. Well, as soon as she's like shoving food in her face, you're like, you don't know if it's poisoned or whatever. And then when he's obsessed with like, now eat this. It's like. Wait a second.
Wait, hold on.
Yeah.
Do I have a webcam on me right now? Yeah. Are you selling this?
I grew up with this. My family
it's
label.
Rule 34 on the open seas.
Eat the apples next.
Okay, easy there.
Hey. And then she bit into the juicy apple. Yeah. And
it's
wait, what?
I'm writing a fic about this.
Yes. I'm going to write a slash. Pirate slash apple fic.
Although in the chat room, Braden... In the chat room, Braden points out a good point. Poison apple in a Disney movie's been done before. So
yeah. That's well, I think that was supposed to be the cue, and then there's a reversal where he's like, "Poisoned? You're retarded! If I wanted to kill you, I'd stab you in the face."
Here comes the moment,
or just throw you off the side.
What are you gonna do? You got a sword in there somewhere? Actually, she does.
I feel like all this fire is a bad idea because the candles are just on plates that are on the tables.
Yeah, everything is just kind of moving around, which, like we said, is a nice touch.
Everything is made of wood and everything is lit by fire. Does anyone see a problem with this?
Yeah. Well, at least they'll be able to put it out rather quickly.
Yeah.
And I half expected it to be made of Kevlar.
Yes. Why don't they use Kevlar and LEDs like normal people?
Seriously, she put that thing in the bed and that was going to burn her feet.
So she's fireproof. We've said that was the hint.
We've established it.
Oh shit! That she's from Heroes.
Yes, she's the fireproof girl.
That so takes on a whole.
Save
new
the
thing,
governor's
yeah.
daughter. Save the world.
So
the
governor's
daughter.
It's about an hour in, and it's like, and this is the story of the movie,
yeah,
or the plot.
Well,
now we finally know what's going on.
Sid
here.
Field would call it the midpoint, where it's like, okay, you there's a plot in motion. It's like, okay, Johnny Depp, and he wants a thing, and then
we have motivation,
but then it's like. But then there's also Ghost Pirates.
Yeah.
And
here's where they came from.
Didn't see that coming. Yeah. So
far, the pacing of this is dead on, though. This is good
stuff. Oh, yeah. 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 At this point, there's been so much fun and stuff that at this point, it's no longer exposition. It's answering questions that you want them to answer.
Yeah.
You know?
What's the thing already? Tell me, for heaven's sake.
The pirates are the Ghost Pirates are the answer to the question, not the original, oh, hey, Ghost Pirates.
Yeah. Because it took us like a good 40 minutes before we were like, ghost pirates, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Sure.
And they're talking about, we were talking about the fire and all that stuff. And Zarban points out, well, everything burned down before electricity. Chicago, for example. And then the lights like, London that time. And then London that time. And then London that time.
London that time.
Actually, it is funny because that we're talking about it.
And Peshtigo.
I don't know that it was this set, but one of their sets did accidentally catch fire.
I think it was the caves
heavily
at the
damaged.
End.
Okay.
Yeah, which seems odd, but of course the caves would be made of styrofoam.
And that's a great. I think that's one of the reasons I decided I loved Barbossa. Is he was like, okay, just for curiosity, what were you gonna do after you killed me? What was the next?
Yeah,
what was step?
I was like, he takes a break out of being crazy to be like, what?
What?
Were you,
yeah.
What like, did you think was gonna happen?
I was gonna name myself captain. Clearly.
Yeah.
Step
he's
three,
like,
prophet.
he's like, let's say that worked. What then?
No, it's like stab pirate ? Step three profit.
This part here seems a little gratuitous.
Yeah, this part
is the most theme park ride.
Yeah, what are they doing exactly?
We're showing off that we're ghost pirates. Yeah. We're showing off our amazing
now, the work
visual.
Here,
this is very good work.
It's
amazing,
and again,
pirates.
It's like for 2003.
Yeah, 2003.
You know, it's like again, this is like not only is this amazing, it's like it's. Groundbreaking at the time. We're like, my God, like, totally moving, freewheeling camera.
Not to mention that one shot where Barbossa comes into the light. And
which
it's just
is coming up. Yeah.
Which is the transformation. But the fact that, you know, it's like, there's 40 ghost animated dudes in a, you know, in a real set. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah, and they're all, it's very much,
and
you
done
know,
in less than a year. Far less than a year. It's just like, blah.
No, like, it was a couple months.
Yeah,
it was ridiculous.
Which I believe if you do the math is far less than a year. All right. So it's like, you know, it's just insane. It's like this shouldn't have been possible, you know, much less, you know, a good movie.
Yeah. This really nails a point home. It's like, okay, now we understand what the bad guys are after. That's important. And I totally get it. And this is a great this is a great line in general, but it was also a great moment in the trailer.
Now, do you think they got John Astin to come back just to play this role when he turns into a ghost?
Wow.
It's like,
oh, cold.
Right out of the Frighteners.
That's true.
It's the judge from the Frighteners.
This was, you know, as a precursor to Davy Jones, although they didn't really know they were going to do Davy Jones, they're, you know, match moving or match animating these characters to real performances for the most part. It's not as sophisticated as it became with Davy Jones.
Oh, with Davy Jones, you see the behind the scenes on that, and you're just like, freaking, I mean, the amount of tracking data that they're using in that. And
now, I didn't put this together until way later, but not only Avatar and Star Trek, but Zoe, what's her name? Saldana is in Saldana. She's in this franchise too.
That's true.
That chick is
the sea witch, right?
Yeah, no, she's the one. Not Tia Dalma. She's the one who has the hat that she gets pissed off and slaps Jack again here in a second. That's fucking Neytiri and
Zoe
Uhura.
Saldana.
Yeah, she was in this the whole time. We didn't notice
the whole time.
Shit,
she was hiding.
The Saldana is coming from inside the film.
it's like how you know Glenn Close was a pirate in Hook.
Yeah. She was that guy. She was Cotton, basically.
Not the boo box. Not the boo box.
Yeah, see, there's the guy. Here's the guy. Even the pirates go, oh, this dude's got a freaking parrot. Come on.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, but then they're like, oh, because he's got no tongue. It's like, oh, that's...
Oh, okay.
That's way fucked up, but the bird's okay now.
That's cool. Yeah. How does the bird know what to say exactly?
Uhura, report.
Yeah. She demonstrates excellent oral sensitivity in this film.
She does.
She's not particularly... There we go. That's still funny. Although he doesn't quite pull off this line, I suppose you didn't deserve that. It's like, no, that's a little of a line.
Zoe Saldana, I mean, she's right up there with, I mean, this is amazing. She's right up there with Harrison Ford as far as being in massive franchises.
Yeah. You know? Well, what was it?
And Sam Jackson, too.
Yeah.
Well, I think she falls into the Mark Hamill postulate. Like, it's the triumvirate of Zoe Saldana, Mark Hamill, and Jeff Goldblum. Just because they're in the movie doesn't mean that's the reason you went to see it. Mm-hmm. Like, she's good.
Or the reason you'll go to see the next thing they do. Because everything she's done that isn't Avatar or Pirates of the Caribbean, you know, and now she's in The Expendables, and no one cared. So
she was?
Yeah, she was the lead of this. She was the
Expendables?
They made a big deal of her. The other thing, whatever the hell that thing was called.
Oh, yeah, it was like
based on the losers or whatever.
Yeah, the Explodables or whatever.
Yeah, really, again, it's based on a beloved comic franchise. And it starts Zoe Saldana of Star Trek and Avatar. Yeah, Sam Neill. He's going, I was in Jurassic Park. Anyone remember?
Your Mark Hamill thing is that people won't go see the movie just because Mark Hamill's in it.
No. A lot of times you won't even know he's in it, and then he'll show up. It's like, what?
There was a line. It was an article in Entertainment Weekly about Jeff Goldblum, and like one of the very first lines was saying that people went to see Independence Day because Jeff Goldblum was in it. Was like saying that people went to see Star Wars because of Mark Hamill.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was gonna say Mark Hamill's been in like.
Yeah.
Give me a second. Slipstream.
The Big Red One.
Big Red One, he's great. I mean, right around Star Wars, he did several movies which were good, but they weren't hits. Big Red One is great. Stingray is silly fun.
And Slipstream,
but that was later. But Big Red One is worth seeing.
Yeah, Big Red One is actually really
Slipstream
good.
Is my favorite bad movie. Everyone's in it. It's directed by the guy who just made Tron. The lead is Mark Hamill, and it's about a future where they fly on hang gliders. It's adorable.
Is this – I can't quite remember – it's funny because they never really explain where he got the compass or anything, but you just, by this point, you've seen the ghost pirates and everything. You're like, fine, the
whatever.
Compass just works the way it does.
And then they keep bringing it back up throughout the entire franchise, but they never really talk about it.
Yeah, at that point, the compass starts changing rules, and I'm not
Well,
happy,
they've got, there's a magical map, and there's, you know, this is, it becomes like Wonderland stuff. It's
right.
Kind of like, oh, there's magic stuff around. There's Aztec gold that,
what does,
know,
I forget what the, is the compass pointing towards the pearl or the island? It's the island, right?
Well, it's pointing towards whatever he wants most, which is...
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's what it becomes. That's right.
Which later is why Beckett wants it in the beginning of the third movie.
Yeah.
Because it points to Davy Jones' heart. He wants to get Davy Jones so he can control the sea. Mm-hmm.
So it's like an atheliometer, but easier to deal with.
Yeah.
Or like a thermometer, but not at all.
Like a thermometer because it ends in meter, but doesn't.
I want
Again,
know.
I'm worried about the skull thing. Don't be a skull. Don't be a
skull.
Don't be a skull.
Oh, God, don't be a skull, please.
Okay.
There's the crossbone right there.
Yeah, exactly.
They're going for
I'm
it.
Like,
no, that is the skull. That is.
Yeah.
It's the two eyes and the nose. If you look back at it, that's.
No, if you look, and there's a hidden
Mickey
in there.
Okay.
And.
I'm smacking Mike. Don't look at the camera. I'm smacking Mike.
The power of radio is very compelling.
Yeah, exactly.
Turn your face to the wall while we smack Mike.
Chris is wearing a top hat.
And a monocle. And he's smiting him with his cane.
All those sharks, those are pirates too. Shark pirates!
Shark pirates! Ghost shark pirates!
The noonday sun shows us for what we really are.
Ghost shark pirates.
You put Obama in sunglasses in that shot, you have the coolest thing ever.
No matter how cool you are.
Pirate ship,
cool as
ghosts, sharks.
Obama in sunglasses.
Obama sunglasses, done. And Bart Simpson, and you're good to go.
What is that guy's problem?
Exposition.
But this is an exposition report.
But this is also a great exposition scene because at the end of it, you're like, I'm not sure if any of that was true.
Yeah.
We spent that whole scene, and I think it was probably bullshit.
But it's doing a good job of mythologizing Jack
Sparrow. Yeah, and in fact, as we discover later, it's totally bullshit. At least half of this is bullshit.
So he's the unreliable expositional narrator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's swigging out of a little flask every so often. How reliable do you expect him to be?
So he's hammered. He's a hammered narrator.
The hammered narrator, yes.
I know I told you a story, but I was drunk at the time.
Yeah. But so now I'll tell you it different.
So, no, I told you already. His dad used to be an auto repairman. And, no, didn't I say that? What did I say last time?
Yeah, wait, no, go back.
You know what? You're okay. I like you.
I'm going to do that. I'm going to have a really important exposition scene in the movie where the guy is totally fucked up and is like, no, okay.
So the Kyber crystal.
No, Darth Vader's your father.
Yeah.
And then he's your, because he's your father. Did I not say, okay, wait, go back.
So... By the way, I want you to have this.
There's another...
No, I made this for you.
There's another... Shut up! I'm talking!
Another
Skywalker.
Yeah. You must come to Alderaan.
Or not, whatever.
Sister must come to some... Wait. No, it's you.
No, I gave up the other movie. Oh,
come
crap.
To, okay, wait, no, okay. Hold on. What?
I don't remember ever owning a droid.
And scene.
I don't remember what I had for breakfast. Is it breakfast?
I said stop wasting my time.
What happened around me?
It would be the kind of thing where I'd want to drag that on just long enough until the audience is like,
okay.
This guy's wasting our time. Yeah. And then end it.
What is this scene about exactly? Yeah.
My drunken dinner with Andre.
Fantastic. To the exposition of your movie delivered by a drunk that you didn't quite even get.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. This is actually.
Yeah.
Fear and Loathing does that.
No, true. Okay.
There you go.
Johnny Depp. See you on all full circle.
I actually didn't mention this at the beginning, but this is the movie that made me first articulate the idea of a perfect movie.
Oh, really? What's a perfect movie?
Because
go on.
The idea of a movie that keeps every promise it makes to you, because I had to distinguish that from like the best movie, because I'm like, well, there's not a single best movie, and like,
what?
I'm not.
Of course there is.
Unaccompanied Minors.
Jaws.
And I was looking
Citizen
at this.
Kane, Citizen Kane, yeah. Citizen Kane.
I was looking at this and I'm like, I don't think this is the best movie I've ever seen, but I can't fault it on any point.
But it's
right.
Best,
you know?
But it's the best movie that it is.
Yeah, it's the best movie that it was trying to be.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So that's when I was like, okay, that's a perfect movie. It was starting in this sequence that I did it. And this is how specific it was in my mind, because I was sitting there watching the movie. And I look at this, not here, but like the big cavernous treasure room that they have. And there's all these, you know, the way it's designed, it's all smoky and shafts of light and stuff like that. And I literally saw that scene and I was like, all right, we've got that room. We've had the sword fight earlier. If there is not a climactic sword fight in that room with skeleton ghost pirates going in and out of shafts of light, fuck this movie. And sure enough, that's the climax of the movie, and I'm like, they got everything.
Yeah.
They fucking nailed everything.
Score, they did it.
To go back, you were like, how you guys have had this conversation about perfect movies on the show before, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, the two that come to mind to me are Jaws and Raiders.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
Jaws and Raiders.
Which I believe if you listen to those commentaries, we identify them as such.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not exactly, you know, mining untread ground.
I think, I would have to say just on the topic, because it's got to rewatch it again, I think, to me, the Pantheon, and again, you could suggest another movie, and maybe I go, oh, that one too. But the perfectest of the perfectest of the perfect movies still to me is Shaun of the Dead.
Mm.
It's
okay, yeah.
There's not a frame that isn't right in that movie. I mean, you can't point to a single bloody thing in that movie, pardon the expression, that just like isn't like exactly what it should have been. You know, it's amazing. But this one, too.
Barbossa for president.
Yeah. I have to imagine. I love the idea. There's 882 gold pieces. I love the idea that he gives this speech fucking every time.
Yeah.
And
we've heard this thing so many times.
He always says Cortez himself. Not always, but like it's Cortez himself. Right. It's never just Cortez. Yeah. Cortez himself.
Cortez himself. Skip to the end.
There's. Did you guys ever used to watch Boston Legal?
No, I heard good things.
There was a guy. This guy is giving a speech to the guy that he's defending, and he says, "Look, now I got you this judge. He's really sympathetic. And he's going to give you probation, but he's going to give you a speech about Ray Charles. He says it every single time. Don't laugh. If you laugh, he'll put you in prison for a year, okay? Don't laugh." And he starts giving this speech, and everyone in the audience, everyone in the courtroom is just like, you know, because they've heard it. And it's just so ridiculous. He's a white guy talking about race and lecturing about how Ray Charles had a gift and you should use your gift, and he just starts busting out laughing.
It's like Vogon poetry scene.
Yeah, you know, it's like the guy that played Odo in Deep Space Nine. He's the judge.
Oh,
Rene, really long French name that I can never pronounce.
Yes.
Yeah.
No. Aubergine.
Aubergine, yeah.
Weird fetishization of apples is just awesomely creepy in this movie.
It makes cultural sense because it's like, you know, well, apples would not be native to the area particularly.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, wow, a fresh apple is a hard thing to get.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, I think he's talking about sex, too.
Strangely, they do the same with strawberries and Firefly.
That's
what
true.
What is this movie trying to tell us about Firefly? It's making me re-examine Firefly.
No. Pirates was like, guys, there was a show, no one saw it. Let's do something. Let's do something.
If we can just find, like, the actor, like, that guy in the background, he was in the scene in Firefly. Then we would have our link.
Great work. They managed to establish and make a joke out of it. Like, they don't just up and kill her and put all this, you know, dump all their blood. Because it's like, well, clearly you wouldn't need to do that.
And you don't kill Keira Knightley 1 hour through the movie.
So they just, he literally just gives her practically just a little nick on her hand. She's freaking out because she thinks he's going to, like, slit her throat or whatever. Just a little nick on the hand. And even she's like, seriously, that was it? Like, you made this whole thing and you're just going to cut my hand a little? Come on.
In the chat,
more drama.
In the chat, Zarban says, waste not. In other words, I'm saving you to rape you after I'm better. Well, that changes things. Thank you, Zarban.
Yeah.
I think Jeffrey Rush is asexual. He fucks apples, but that's not a thing. So it's okay.
Who hasn't?
Look, it's Glenn Close.
No. You fuck one apple.
Yeah. Really. No one ever forgets these things.
Yeah, it's amazing.
That's one of the things that I took away from Jay and Silent Bob Strikes Back, is they're doing a joke about Jason Biggs, and he's like, it's the pie fucker. I fucked one pie! It's like, you put your dick in a pie!
He said, dude.
The other good thing from that movie is calling a girl boo-boo kitty fuck. That's adorable.
I love that he's so careless about the coin right there.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just going to throw it now.
Well, he was so angry that he just smacked her with it and forgot that was even a thing for a moment.
But she learned her damn lesson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. Don't have to tell her three times.
What do you say to a woman with two black eyes?
Nothing you haven't told her before.
Nothing you told her. I haven't told her twice already. Ba-dam! Oh, we're going to get the letters.
And Corey's the one laughing.
Yeah, that's right. The one woman in the room is laughing at that joke. So, okay. So, no need to send that email. We've been validated, all right?
She's like, it's funny because it's true.
As Sean Baby said about people who are offended by his column. It's like, okay, so you just heard an hour of semi-winty banter and then a deeply offensive thing.
Honestly,
you,
I would be...
Yeah, you didn't just find our hidden agenda.
Yeah.
You didn't like a joke. Save the email. Move on.
Really, after all the things we've gotten away with, if we got emails for that, I would be stunned.
Exactly. Oh, have you seen the internet?
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's true. Oh, now you figured it out.
Yeah, I worked out the internet. Okay, so it's like, you feckless pack of ingrates. See, I think there would be a faster way to say that because time's kind of the essence. Yeah.
Well, it reminds me of the Shakespeare insult generator that used to be online.
Nice.
Yeah, it used to be like adjective... Adjective, group noun, singular noun, or something like that.
Oh, so you blistered pack of chow hounds.
Yeah, something like that.
I found it.
You found the Shakespeare insult generator?
Fucking A.
Wow.
There's no room for faith, truth, nor honesty in this bosom of thine. It's all filled up with guts and midriff. Drop into the rotten mouth of death.
No, there's another
I'm
one.
Use that one.
It's three columns of text, and you throw
it's
them
like
together.
Mad Libs with Shakespeare. Yeah, yeah. Nice.
There was an old.
Oh no, that was just Shakespeare insults.
Yeah,
yeah.
There was an old little application, an insult generator called Deliver the Dis way
wow.
back in the day.
Holy shit, this is great! Thou churlish flybitten cranker bosom.
There you go. There you go. I love it.
Thou froward tardy gated hypocrite.
Do you do show notes after the fact?
Let's not say things we
you
can't
need
take
to,
back.
You need to share these links with people.
Here's my favorite.
I'm deeply
thou
offended.
Thou impertinent rump-fed slug. Those will be in the show notes, iTunes listeners.
By the way, speaking of apropos of nothing other than the topic, our mutual friend of the podcast, Adam Bertocci, the creator of Two Gentlemen of Lebowski.
Lebowski, yeah.
Have you seen that the new thing is someone is doing Terminator 2 Shakespeare style?
No.
That's the new thing. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because Two Gentlemen of Lebowski is awesome, but you can't do it with Terminator 2.
No. It's just, you know.
I don't think it's whether it's a ripoff of Bertocci.
I'm not saying it's a ripoff or anything. It's just like, it's the same thing that happened with.
But I think it's a genius idea because it's literally they've taken the script from Terminator. You know, they're trying to get funding to do a mini, you know, a cheap show of it. But stage play, I think. They've literally taken the script from Terminator and Shakespeare-ified it. And and again, it's like I think I'd go see that if that was playing at the Equity Waiver
this
Theater.
Is a great one.
I'd go check it out.
I don't know where he got it, but in the chat, Jimmy V says, "Now listen to the words. It's literary. Thou errant common kissing infection.
Ooh,
fuck.
Ooh.
There's like a backstory to that.
You fucking sleazy whore is what that means.
Yeah. No,
but by the time the sleazy whore gets it, you're blocks away. So that's what's so great about it.
Going back to the Terminator 2 thing, it's like you know what happened after Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Yeah.
It's like every single... Okay, yeah.
Which is a great idea.
Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. You
and,
know?
And Keira Knightley should do it. Isn't she the one doing it? Who's in
yeah,
that?
Yeah, she is doing
she
it.
She is doing it. There you go. So good deal.
Better her than Kirsten Dunst. Jesus Christ.
Snaggletooth? Yes.
Told you guys.
Ah, you've heard the show.
Yes.
Oh, so you're a fan. Yeah. Well, between her and Kirstie Alley, I'm really not a fan of the K.I.R. troop.
No, I got it from the same place Fig did. What would Tyler Durden do?
Yeah.
If your name begins with K-I-R, Fig's not a fan of your acting.
I can't think of others.
Kristen Bell?
No, that's K-R-I, sir.
Oh, so she gets by.
Yeah.
Plus, she's cute, even though she's cross-eyed. I said it. I meant it.
Yeah. And he will never drink Kirin beer.
Ooh, yeah.
What? I think you're taking this a bit too far.
Oh, are they?
Dude, you could do Shakespeare. Sorry. Whoa, I just had an idea for an internet thing. You could do Shakespeare like David Caruso. To be, glasses off, or not to be.
Yeah!
You could do a shit ton of stuff like that.
Oh, my God. Yeah. It'd just be that over and over again for an hour.
Not only you could, but everybody else on the internet could already have done that.
Yeah. It could be a thing. It might already be a thing. But I invented it retroactively.
Okay.
That was me.
Okay, so apparently this is love story time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. There's kissing.
Stop talking.
This is a kissing book.
I was told this is Pirates. I was told there would not be kissing in this.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you wanted me to grab your boob.
I'm sorry.
Wow, I read that way wrong.
First
off, I'm not that kind of
all
guy.
Right.
Second
well,
of all,
I mean, I'm already here, so yes. Like
there's a lack of virile young men.
You know why?
Because it'd be really like silly if I took my handbag and you wanted me to put it. Like, should I just finish while I'm here?
You know what I got to say though? Of all the times where a guy could get away with this, might be our last day on earth.
Yeah.
I think he might be able to get away with it.
So there are drunken ghost pirates coming.
We are
to
facing
us.
The nigh of apocalypse.
So
you have to make a special connection with someone.
Good ghost pirates and stuff. So
maybe a special
know.
Connection in the butt.
You want it?
Yeah.
It's actually I have a lot of respect for this character. Maybe not this moment.
For
but
Will or for Elizabeth?
For Will, because he actually puts the pieces together. He's like, "Oh, wait a second. They're coming for me now."
And I'm the one that's put you in danger.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, goddammit.
Yeah. Jeez. One boob graze, and look what happens.
Yeah.
Can't I just be a blacksmith like a normal commoner?
Making swords in a barn was great.
We've referred to Crack.com before and how it's interesting how some news sources actually don't cite their stories as well as Crack does. Crack will, like, they fill their articles with, here's where we got that. And there was an interesting one recently. They were talking about things that humanity just plain forgot for centuries at a time. And one of the things was the cure for scurvy, where initially someone had put together, I don't know why, but lemons are curing scurvy. And then they forgot that. they started using limes and it never worked. And they're like, I don't know why this doesn't work, because limes are all over the place in Europe, but lemons are kind of hard to come by. And then they just used limes forever. People still kept getting scurvy. But then the shortening of the trips of the ships across the ocean, they were getting faster. They were like, oh, they're not getting scurvy, so limes are working. And they just kept doing that for 100 years, and they're like, the limes don't work anymore. What did we mutate? It's like, no, they were lemons.
They're not the same?
Right, anyway. It's vitamin C. Guys.
Vitamin C does that.
Vitamin C.
We have pills for that now.
Can you please watch The Muppet Show or something like it?
They would also bring lemon juice, like Arctic expeditions and so on would bring lemon juice because that was a concentrate. But they didn't understand. They did that, but they didn't understand that it could go bad and not have as much C content to it.
Anyway, hence limey.
So the story goes, yes, that the British sailors always, why do they always get limes? What's the deal with the limes and the sailing?
Because they're morons. We should be calling them lemons.
Lemmies.
Lemmies. Lemons. Lemmers. 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 No, that's not it.
I was just rereading The Blank Slate recently, and it brought an interesting thing that cultural progression is actually based on contact with other cultures. Because if a culture is too isolated, it stagnates, and it can even retrograde. Like there's an isolated island, the Tasmanians or someone like that. They actually lost technology over time. The people who first sailed to this island, it wasn't whether it was Tasmania or one of those. They got there, they could make fire. They had all these things. By the time the Europeans found the island 500 years later, they'd forgotten all that. They actually had fire and lost it.
Wow.
because they as they said, we don't know how that happened, but we know from the archaeological thing that they had it when they got here. They were making fire, but somewhere along the way, they actually lost the knowledge of how to do it. Like all their fire guys got hit by a tree or who knows what. But it's like, shit, did all the fire guys die? Oh. They actually lost technology over time. And
then they just all crowded around the newly killed rabbit like, ha, 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 ha.
There's
all right, it's good.
There's a Russian isolated culture that they actually walk on all fours.
No.
Yes.
That's a genetic thing, yeah. Genetically, they're inbred to do that.
Okay,
yeah.
Culturally, I would be like, uh-huh.
Yeah, culturally, yeah, but it's an inbred thing. But
is that the royal family?
Not yet, but close. The Habsburgs, but seriously. Now, seriously, they're going to have, a freaking two-ship cannon fight. Who does that in a movie? Only crazy people.
Trey, what are your problems with this movie?
I don't really have any problems with this movie other than, it's... I said my problems are only hypothetical problems in terms of I'm the studio executive and someone pitches me this. I'm like, get out of my office right now.
Your problem with this movie is that it's so damn implausible.
My problem with this movie is, it literally is. It's the duckbill platypus of movies. It's like, okay, this can't possibly survive. This shouldn't even exist.
Someone was high when they greenlit this.
And yet, by golly, it's like, but yeah, it's perfectly enjoyable. And it's wonderfully fun and amazingly well made. And I don't have any problem with it. I have some problems with what they did later, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll be talking a lot about that.
By the time they got to Pirates Reloaded, it was like, oh, whoops, no, not so much. But
Pirates Reloaded.
Can we? Can I make a proclamation? Are we big enough now that we can make proclamations and the internet listens?
Yeah, go for it.
Here's my thing. I'm going to stretch my
legs.
Teagle speak. The joke of calling whatever you're making a hypothetical sequel and you're making a joke out of it, Electric Boogaloo. Moratorium on that shit. It's over now.
Yeah.
It's been overdone.
All in favor?
All in favor? Aye.
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 All right.
So say you all.
You're going to have to come up with a funnier fucking... Beyond Thunderdome is still on the shelf. You can use Beyond Thunderdome if you want. But Electric Boogaloo has been done.
I like adding...
slash soapbox.
I like adding inning to anything.
Yeah. The rape
inning. The rape inning.
The pirate inning.
Sin City 2 will be Sin City inning. The Sin City inning.
The Caribbean inning.
Yeah.
Ghostbusters 2.
The Ghostbusters ring.
Pirates too.
Yeah, exactly.
The pirate ring.
And it's not even close to
and
exactly
wait, but this, what was the sequel to the ring called? The ring a ring?
The ring a ding.
The ring a ding.
The ring a ding ding.
The ring a ding ding. Yes, that's awesome. And also, of course, the
shiny ding ding ding.
Shitty lazy tagline. Just invert whatever you're talking about and say that it will do that.
All right, so Pirates of the Caribbean.
The Caribbean will pirate. Apes will rise. The Caribbean will pirate.
Furious will be fast.
The fast will be furious.
Fast and the furious. The fast will be furious.
Yeah.
The stars will be tracked.
Yeah. That's how you write a tagline these days, apparently.
Nice. My whole thing.
Ghostbusters. The ghosts forget busters.
Yeah.
On Twittering, it's like, if you want to come up with your fucking easy romantic comedy title, just take an existing expression and come up with a literal. So I was like, ill-conceived could be about a guy who has cancer who has a. He impregnates a woman and the baby is ill-conceived. And it's a bad idea, but it's also a pun.
Somewhere Blake Snyder is smiling down on you.
Hashtag Hollywood. Anyway, back on the inning.
No, seriously. You should write that because it would sell.
Yeah. Disney would snap that shit up.
I want to see Passion of the Christ too. The Passion of the Christening.
The Passioning.
Have we discussed this?
I believe it's pronounced the Passion of the Christening, which is a whole different
thing. Yeah, the Passion of the Christ too. The Christening. Shit, it works.
Yes, the Christening. Yes. Hold it. Get me the phone.
And scene.
Yes. Snakes on a plane. The snakes will be on a plane.
Hey, that's a pirate sigil you got there on a fork.
Yeah. He seems pretty cool with it overall.
Now look at this shit.
Oh yeah, they're blowing the crap out of these.
It's a nutty movie.
Is the ultimate success of this film that the story is, well, I'll compare it to the sequels, is good and comprehensible? Because there's a lot of story going on. You can't say that there's not story going on in the last two movies. It's just that there's so fucking much of it.
Well, there's a lot of plot.
It's easy to get lost.
It's easy to get lost because there's a lot of it, and there's a good several chunks of it that are completely contradictory.
Yeah.
To each
well,
other.
I think we'll get there, but about this movie. Yeah. The success of this is just that
it's very
straightforward. It's a world, it's characters, they have problems, they overcome them.
There's an overarching plot, which is, you know, the attempt to solve the curse. I mean, it's even called the Curse of the Black Pearl. The Black Pearl will be cursed. It's called The Curse of the Black Pearl. The story, it tells you right in the title, which a good title does, this is what this movie is about. It's about these guys are trying to cure the curse that's on them and how, you know, but they're kind of bad guys, so they're doing it, you know, any way they can, and it's interrupting all these other people's lives, and these other people are the interesting main characters. But there is a very clear through line. There's a very clear arc for each one of the characters. Whereas in the second and third one, it's like, well, just give them screen time, have them do stuff. And it was funny when he talked about rum, so
they did
do it again.
They did it. Cool guys don't look like an explosion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even cool pirates. It's funny that there's an almost identical scene in Master and Commander and just as well done.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Damn.
You know,
Really, if you're a guy like Barbossa, though, you're like, all right, I got two choices here. I can run and maybe die and die like a bitch, or I can stand here and either die...
Looking cool.
Or look fucking awesome if nothing, if I...
But he wouldn't die anyway.
Like, and he pulls a Buster Keaton. Anyway. And he right. pulls a Buster die. Keaton that it falls all
yeah,
perfectly around,
just all around him.
At least he's not in the tree.
Yeah.
We've been giving a lot of shit to the trailers, and it occurs to me that...
It's not the trailers, the teaser
well,
that we gave a lot
yeah,
of shit
teaser,
to.
Yeah, the teaser. But even the trailers that came after were full of the worst jokes in the series. Like, say goodbye, clunk, goodbye. And that shit. And you like pain, try wearing a corset. It's like all the little pithy one-liners in the movie were in a trailer like, please watch this. It occurs to me that it might be difficult to make a trailer for this movie. There might be too much going on.
My feeling is, because I've noticed it on the Pixar movies too, for the most part, the trailers don't – what gets me interested in going to see a Pixar movie is that it's a Pixar movie. And whenever I see a trailer, I'm like, no, not really. I'm not feeling it, but I'll trust you. I'll go see it. And then I love it. And I think the thing is that a really well-told story doesn't – often boil down to 2.5 minutes of awesome, come see this.
Well, now you get down to the fact that Pixar isn't the one making the trailer. It's a company that does only that.
Right, right.
But I'll bet you they get the best company they can find.
Well, of course they do, but that doesn't guarantee... They're still marketing people in the end.
Well, yeah, but ultimately... Okay,
as the meme that's kind of died out, unless it resurges again, the whole idea of recutting movies to make a trailer that's completely misleading about the movie...
Right.
...shows you that even if you don't manipulate the footage, which I think is cheating when people did that, but some people, you know, cut these amazing different versions of it. Well,
you can
like,
just play with the context.
You can make this movie look completely serious, like it's a straight pirate movie, you know, and kind of like cut around Johnny Depp a little bit or show the parts where he's not, you know, not being a gay transvestite. And I know those are two different things, but the so don't write the email. But you know,
Trey was in theater. He knows.
I know from transvestites and gay, and
Transylvania for that matter.
That's right, where the gay will be transvestited. No, that doesn't work. But the what?
Yeah, what are we talking about?
We're talking about trailer editing.
Trailer editing.
This movie's trailer didn't make you go, oh, that looks amazing.
When you edit a trailer, this is important. What? that you can make it look like anything that you can cut around. And this movie is so epic and has so many components to it. I mean, I think the movie you're talking about, Pixar, is like the movie that you can kind of go, wait, what? As far as how you put a trailer together, it's like, imagine how many trailers you could make for Up.
Yeah.
That people go, wait. Wait, what? I'm taking the kids to see it's a hospital drama about an old lady who dies.
That little grin the monkey gives, by the way, when Barbossa's talking about it, totally by accident. They're like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's the perfect shot. Because, like, not you. We call the monkey Jack. And the monkey's like, hee, for a second.
Because if you would like to try to achieve that, Jeffrey West would have said that line 500,000 times.
Yeah,
to try
exactly.
And, get that
and
to
then
happen.
The one time he does it, he flubs the line. And they're pulling a George Lucas. Okay, let's edit so that Obi-Wan goes to grab the thing 2 seconds later.
I actually digitally put the monkey smile in.
I actually think in the commentary they talk about, dude, that fucking monkey was so hard to work with. And then that one time in that one shot, it did something amazing, and we didn't even want it to.
Now, see that right there? That's real. That's the real deal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They blew up a frickin' ship.
Huh?
Speaking of things like along the monkey.
That might be a miniature ship.
Pyro. I am the very definition of incorrigible. I watched the 4th Kevin Smith talking to an audience documentary.
Oh, my God. That incorrigible knave.
And it was
I bite
very,
my thumb at my...
It was the first 45 minutes were painful to watch. It was not very good.
Yeah.
This was too fat for 40. It was amusing at the end, but the first one was great, and the second one was watchable, so on. The 4th one is really bad. But he tells an interesting anecdote about working with Bruce Willis on a couple of dicks.
Oh man. Boy.
And he's like... you guys know this story.
Yeah,
it's
I know
the
this
most,
story.
I saw it. It's the most awkward thing you can
was
possibly...
That was that the working title of...
It was called A Couple of Dicks, and then they changed it to Cop.
And by the way, if you can find it online, the original screenplay, I haven't seen Cop Out yet, but just the fact that Tracy Morgan is in it, I know they didn't use the original script. And the original script is so fucking good, so funny, so witty.
So of course they didn't use it.
So if you can find it online, if you can find the original script for that when it was still called A Couple of Dicks, I highly recommend checking it out because it's genuinely hysterical.
Anyway, Kevin Smith basically tells the story like the joke is I'm going to try to answer a lot of questions tonight, and a guy comes up and asks a question about directing Bruce Willis, and then joke being he spends the entire documentary answering that one question. So it goes off in about 25 different tangents, a couple of which are amusing, sort of. That's it. In any case, ultimately he gets to the answer, and he's like, Bruce Willis was kind of a D-bag. And then he explains the story, and you're like, no, Kev, you're kind of a D-bag. Because the story basically boils down to Kevin couldn't direct Bruce Willis, and Bruce Willis kept asking questions like, okay, well, what kind of lines are you using? And Kevin Smith's like, and he kind of gestures medium-ish and something like that. And he's like, not getting the performance he wants out of Bruce Willis, and he's been so hard to work with. And ultimately, Kevin Smith was like, no, just do what you did in Moonlighters or Moonlighting. It's like, oh, fuck. Dude, don't – oh, shit. And he's telling the story, and I'm sitting here like, oh, don't talk to Bruce Willis that way. And ultimately, it works out.
The whole
Bruce
thing-
Willis comes out looking pretty good because he's like, Bruce Willis does it, even though Kevin was such a fucking moron.
Honestly, the entire anecdote that he thinks it's really cute and endearing, but the entire anecdote is like, I suck at directing and Bruce Willis hated me.
Yeah, Bruce Willis is so much more of a professional than I am.
Yeah, he is so much more professional, and I did not deserve him, and he knows that and hates me.
Yeah, okay. And he sensed it immediately.
And Kevin and the moral that Kevin Smith is trying to give is don't never meet your heroes.
Yeah. whereas the moral is be good at your job.
Yeah. Never meet your heroes if you're not up to it.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're going to be a douchebag. I think it would have been fine to meet Bruce Willis, but yeah.
In any case, Too Fat for 40 was definitely ripping off Surrogates.
Oh. Well, that's a given.
There was a lot of really great stories in the first one. Go watch the Superman one. And
the first two are great.
I like Kevin Smith better as a personality than as a filmmaker. He's made a couple of films that I thought, oh, that was all right.
Don't watch Too Fat for 40 then. Don't meet your hero. Meet your hero on that one.
I like the first two evenings with Kevin Smith.
Yeah.
I kind of like the first two Kevin Smith movies, and I've kind of been, we've agreed to see other people since then.
Yeah.
And it's working out fine.
I lift that line all the time. I did know.
Jersey Girl is good.
Chasing Amy. As well.
That's what I keep hearing.
That one. You should definitely see
Hey,
that
guys,
one.
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Jersey Girl, seriously, check it out. It's his best movie.
Anyway. Well, this movie's a little long.
What the hell is that on the right? What the hell is that?
That guy always pops up.
That's Courtney Love.
That wasn't even a person on the right. What the hell was that?
That
guy's one of those painted coconut things you get.
That guy pops up at a bunch of shots, and every single time he looks really scary.
Yeah.
Had they already explained what the pistol was, or did they just basically explain it to us? No, they explained it. Yeah, he was left with the one shot to take care of himself. But
That was the setup of this shot's not for you, right?
Yeah.
He's been saving.
Well, that
it
was
all
the
along.
Explanation for, you know. Which is interesting because he pulls that bluff a lot. He sticks that gun in a lot of people's faces, but when they don't move, he's like, God damn it.
Well, because he understands the true intent of a gun. The gun is to make sure that no one gets shot.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
Take that, Second Amendment.
Ooh.
Wait, what?
Wait. Mm-hmm.
No, see, the,
the Second Amendment clearly states that women are 3/5 of a person. Wait, what?
So basically,
And you tell your kids that.
Yeah.
Because I'm...
According to the exchange rate, basically, they're Canadian. That's all it says.
It's like women
it's not a bad thing.
Women are Canadian. No, women are black.
Anyway.
I love that she knows his entire history. Like, there's a book about him somewhere.
I'm sure there are penny dreadfuls all over the place about Captain Jack Sparrow.
He is. It's like Unforgiven. There's been, the guy from Warehouse 13 has been following him around. He just recently ditched him, though. And he's written books about him, which are somewhat true.
I like how he also kind of puts away the happy-go-lucky. Like, he's still genuinely just, you know, debilitated from all the drinking he's done. But every so often, he's like, all right, fun time's over. Listen up, hussy. I'm going to explain to you how life really is.
Yeah. There we go.
It gets as serious as he is physiologically capable of being.
Now, have they not...
And she's mad. I love that she's mad at him. More than getting them into this situation or anything, she's mad at him for not being awesome. Don't meet your heroes, kids. This is what we're talking about.
Now, this is going to be coming up as the first Why Is the Rum Gone? Yes?
Yes.
So
this is the original
Why Is the Rum Gone?
Actually funny because where did it come from?
Now, this is the part where I always want to hear the Fish Guys Calypso music that ended up getting used by Girls Gone Wild.
Yeah.
Hey, it's royalty free. They could have.
Yeah.
I love the fact, again, they worked in the song. Like, they established earlier that it's part of this universe and stuff, but they bring it back and they're really just going at it with a gusto. And I'm like, it's. God damn it. How does it work? Fucking music. How does it work?
How does it work? And then they hang a lantern. It's like, I'm going to teach you the whole crew. We're going to sing it all the time.
Yeah.
Again, I see what they did there. Now, this, I have to say, you know, big bonfire, bunch of rum, beach, Keira Knightley. Yeah, I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm okay. I'm down.
I'd be okay being marooned. In fact, go away.
Yeah.
Go away.
I just like to watch this scene by myself.
I'm just going to pause. I'm gonna
go cut around.
Should
cut
we,
around,
should we leave,
up.
Trey?
Yeah. No, see, you, what?
And this is the one time that Jack, it's funny because this is the one time that Jack really opens up. He's actually legitimately opening up, and she's the one manipulating him here. And then
pirate.
And then he wakes up the next morning, and he's like, "Oh, can't do that again. Got burned that time."
Yeah. And yet he's always remains kind of fascinated from then on. Like,
yeah,
she, something about
he's like,
her.
She outsmarted me.
Damn it, she's good.
Yeah. And in the second one, even in the second one, there's kind of a payoff to the beginning of this relationship where he's like, all right, you got me.
Yeah.
Okay.
There really is an odd kind of, you know, it's his weakness. His one weakness is he legitimately does kind of develop a thing for her he keeps denying, and sometimes he'll go opposite of that. But it's, it's kind of like, damn it. It's like, you fool.
It almost becomes this thing where, you know, she's really she loves the story about him. And I guess we have to, by the way, take it back. If he's got all these stories about him, then Jack Sparrow is a name of some kind. So I was wrong to say earlier that, like, no one would have heard of him or anything. But, you know, she's enamored with him as being like this.
Hero.
You know, this hero or like this anti-hero, you know, this ideal,
tall tale.
Idealized,
romanticized.
That's a perfect word for it. This romanticized pirate. And so that's what she thinks pirates are. And when she gets into the pirate, you know, culture, that's what she decides to be. And he finds himself as fascinated with her as that character as she was with him when she thought he was the character. I love how he's like, I'm so...
That's probably the most slapstick that they get between the two of them. Yeah. She has that little stubborn sitting on the thing, and then he's like, oh, one of these days, Alice.
Lucy!
But I love that the Lucy moment is, I will shoot you in the head.
So shoot you in the head right now.
He pulls out his gun and everything. He's like, I don't even care. I will bust this right in your skull. But then he doesn't, because he's like, principal.
Been in the revenge business so long.
Yeah.
Who's going to make your swords? No one, man. Oh, that's right. You don't know that he actually does all the blacksmithing on
you. Oh, yeah. Darn it. Okay. And now we're back to the boat where everyone is clean and well-dressed.
Yes.
Which is probably harder to maintain on a boat.
She's got a nice sexy little smudge on her head right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I only go for girls with smudges.
Yeah.
What?
I don't know. There's like the real dirty, and then there's like sexy dirty.
Yeah, then there's
the makeup
dirty.
Yeah, the makeup artist was just like, hold on just a second.
I wanted to be filthy.
Like Bill Murray at the end of Ghostbusters 1.
Yeah.
Everyone else is completely covered
in
marshmallow.
He's got some soap suds on his shoulder.
I like your characterization of the makeup person. Okay, you're good.
wait. Hold on.
Fabulous.
Wait. And he's just got his thumb out and just puts it on her nose and like, beep. It's like,
there, go.
You are a disaster victim.
I can't look. It's
so fairly Edna Mode was the makeup artist.
You're beautiful, darling. You really are.
Now go remind them who you are. Pirate!
I'm too genius. I cannot look. It's too bright.
I do too much. Go.
I cannot touch you, darling. I cannot touch this.
You guys are so missing out on Dorkman's expressions.
Yeah.
I'm too good. Go.
He's
fucking funny.
No tears.
Yeah.
No sword.
That's not cleaning.
Yeah, what the heck is that?
That's waterproofing.
Tarring?
Yes.
He's pooping the swab deck.
Ooh.
I see what you did.
Yeah. What's in that bucket?
Yeah.
There's a wordplay there. Some wordsmithery.
Yeah.
Wordsmithery.
I could write movies.
Yeah. It's easy. The thing about Lee Ehrenberg in this movie is that he doesn't have to be a skeleton to look kind of Scully.
Oh, yeah, because you can basically see his skull. Pretty much, there it is.
He's got like his skull has no. There's no like meat on his head. It's just skin on the bone.
And he's got some pretty his brow. Especially that they got him lit here. His brow ridges are pretty well. You can pretty much sketch his skull.
What's in your wallet?
From this shot, yeah. He's got some serious eye sockets going on.
There's really not enough jokes available about Cro-Magnons.
Not as many as there should be.
Yeah, I know, right?
Although I bet the Neanderthals had a lot of them.
Fucking yeah, dude.
Dude, there they go.
Yeah.
You're those fags using fire.
And they got theirs.
Yeah. Let's move to France.
Okay. I think this is the last exposition dump in this movie. Yeah. Where they're really like, okay, backstory, ouch, and go. But again, by this point, you're like, you've been hearing about fucking Bootstrap Bill and all this stuff. It's like,
tell me already.
Yeah.
Tell me. And then he does, like, thank you, I can relax. It's like that episode of The Simpsons where the schools are closed down and Lisa's going nuts and she eventually runs into the kitchen and she's like, grade me! And Marge just writes an A on a piece of paper and hands it to her and she walks away like, oh, God.
Now, with all the conversation in this movie about Davy Jones and Davy Jones' locker, it wasn't until the second movie when they were trying to figure out.
Yeah, they were like,
freaking Davy Jones. Yeah. Let's actually have that be a guy and a character in the Bootstrap Bill story and blah, blah, blah. I mean, it doesn't seem to...
Stellan Skarsgård in this movie.
Yes.
No, it's totally... It's the kind of thing where they... I don't imagine that they were setting it up at all. I mean, Davy Jones' locker and stuff is definitely an old school maritime thing.
You know, it's like you sort of just accept that.
And he was in The Monkees.
I like the presentation, and we're going to get to this in the following commentaries, but I like the presentation of Davy Jones, but not so much Davy Jones' locker. For some reason, I never pictured it being a dry desert island.
No, Davy Jones' locker was a misstep, and that was...
I thought Davy Jones' locker was supposed to be the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah, that's in the third one.
And a locker.
So
the combination.
I mean, the second one is a little disappointing, and the third one makes me want to rage at the sky. So we'll get there.
Well, it's not the sky's fault. How do you think the sky feels when everyone takes all their problems out on it?
The sky is like the hockey puck in Toy Story. Like, what are you looking at, your hockey puck? Cut to sky like, hey.
Yeah.
What? Yeah, the hockey puck is just like...
This the Simpsons old man yells at cloud.
I anthropomorphize the sky by way of anthropomorphized hockey puck. Yeah. All right.
That's fun.
And we're back to our case.
Did he tell the speech again? Did he?
Good morning.
Yes. Yeah,
so less than an hour.
So like,
yada yada, Cortez himself.
Yeah, yeah, I've never been abused by this. It's like, all right, here we go again. This time for real. Okay. Yeah.
Someone's asking one of the pirates later, did he do the Cortez? He did the fucking Cortez every day with the Cortez thing.
He's like, begun by blood. It's like, all right, he's going to do it again. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Andrew Jackson in the lobby of the White House had an enormous block of cheese.
I like your reference, sir. I was just going to say, Mike was like, and we've begun the thing. And one of the pirates in the back is like, whoa. Woo. Woo.
Yay.
Yeah, whoop, whoop, whoop.
800 pieces of gold. We know the speech, yeah.
Yeah.
I love that bit where he's rambling on and Barbosa's response is, shut up.
All
You're
right.
next.
Anyway, now we were talking earlier about pacing. It feels okay so far, but there's 40 minutes left.
I was going to say now the climactic fight breaks out and this is the end, right? But there, it isn't, is it?
No. Better part of an hour left to go. That's
okay.
Where it's sort of like, Your movie is long.
Thanks, Kermit.
Long it is.
And Yoda.
There's a fine line.
But this doesn't – I don't think that bothers me because it's about to get into the climactic fight pretty soon. And there's a lot of neat stuff. Like we get to see the pirates on the bottom of the ocean.
The walking in the ocean
stuff.
Is coming. And that keeps you awake.
It needs to be 10 minutes less, I think, is the problem.
I would go 25.
No.
Where are you going to – where do you take him out?
I don't know what you take out, but
I'm just saying that. This whole last plot thing is a double take thing where they come out, but the ship's not there, but then it is there. You could have just gone, they come out, the ship's there, fight, ship. They escape back to Port Royal. He got sound credits. As opposed to...
How did they get to come along? These guys weren't even allowed to go to the promotion, and now they're right next to the ad.
Yeah.
What?
Yes. They merited a boat ride.
Because they're funny.
Yeah.
Hey, you, comedy relief. We need you to be observational.
We no longer need you to predict the docks because that
don't criticize the universe that gives jobs to people that are just comedy relief. Because we're going to be the guys that win if that ever happens.
That explains the two
Oh,
pirates.
You mean I can become the president just by having snappy retorts?
See, they're the counterpoint to the other two guys, and that's why they have the confrontation that happens.
I want
to
live in the universe where pluckiness is rewarded.
Yeah, where you can just like be, you know, a plucky sidekick with no
visible skills. A pluckatocracy? You want to live in a pluckatocracy?
On the other hand...
That's socialism.
On the other hand, this could be our universe because they appear to just be failing upwards.
They are, yeah.
It's the Peter principle of piracy.
Thing. Yeah.
the Peter pirate principle. Back to pickle peppers.
Yeah, I was like, Peter what's pirate. Happening here? It's turning into a fucking tongue twister.
I'm so glad that you're referencing the Peter principle, that still is people are aware of.
I always use Hofstadter's Law all the time.
It's awesome.
What is happening? Explain.
Hofstadter's Law?
Yeah.
Or the Hofstadter's principle? Law is it always take you longer than you think it will, even when you take into account Hofstadter's Law?
Yeah. And the Peter principle, are you familiar or not with the Peter principle? Peter principle
not by
is,
name.
Is that in
business world,
you know, in hierarchies, you rise to your level of incompetence. And so it's like you get promoted to the point where you get a job that you can't actually do.
But you get stuck there.
And that's where you stay because you're not going to go beyond that. But they're not going to fire you because you're that guy who has that job. So the theory being that in the extreme form, the entire hierarchy of a business structure will all be staffed by people who are not good enough to do the job they've been hired, they've been promoted to get into because they stay there forever because they never go farther. So the idea.
And then there's also the third one in that.
I'm so depressed right now.
In the little trifecta, there's also the, what was it, the Scotty technique of estimating your delivery time. How does that one go, Chris?
What?
The Scotty technique?
Oh, the Scotty principle. It's whenever someone is asking you how long it's going to take, multiply by four.
Yeah, because they will. I think we see that illustrated in The Road Warrior long before it was become the Scotty principle.
Yeah.
Here they come, marching.
There we go. And that's
ILM,
that's
you crazy bitch.
That's a more developed version of the shot from the teaser. The teaser was like an early shot, but it was actually more complicated because it was just the foot, and you could see all the
so
tendons
subtle.
And stuff moving.
I love how subtle it is when they go under the boat.
Yeah, they turn back. Yeah, it's amazing.
I was going to say the subtle shot where there's a bunch of dead guys walking across the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah,
no, because in the first shot, it's just a silhouette, and you can just barely tell that it's going on, and yet they still bothered to do it.
Yeah.
The sad thing is because in Land of the Dead, the same theory is used. But George Romero couldn't do the shot. You know, he couldn't do the actual underwater shot, which would have been a fantastic shot for that movie.
Why does this work on them? Why does Norrington fall for it?
Seriously?
Who is he expect? Noah's just a fisherman out on a pleasure cruise in eel-infested waters.
She's got a parasol at night. Something's wrong.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's for the sun.
It's for the sun.
I was gonna say, I wear my sundress at night.
Yeah, really? What? I can understand being put off for a second, like, what is going on? But really, no. How many ways can that go? That in the middle of this, you know, the island of the dead, these two chicks come out in sundresses and parasols.
Hello?
In the middle of the night.
Hello? How are you? We come for a visit from the land of the dead. How are you?
Quite honestly, I'd be more scared of them.
Yeah, like,
that's the kind of scary shit that you read about.
Shoot
out of
them! Shoot them!
Yeah.
Shoot them!
I don't know what they're going to turn into, but it's not going to be good.
Yeah, exactly.
But they're going to be mean. Yeah. They're going to be ugly, and there's going to be a million more of them.
Them sirens took him and turned him into a toad.
Yeah. Exactly. It's like, yeah, those are sirens or ghosts or something.
Yeah. No, you just shot two unarmed women. Well, I'm pretty sure they were turning into sirens.
Yeah.
Oh, well, carry on then.
Yeah.
Listen, quite honestly, I don't say this often, and I, you know, I don't normally support this, but if they were dressed like that, they were asking for it.
Yeah, no,
quite honestly, in
this
situation.
Case, I actually would use that defense. Yeah. They should.
That's scary.
They shouldn't.
There is something wrong about the previous 30 seconds of this podcast, but I'm not quite sure what.
It's like going to that island and seeing, you know, a group of little kids singing a playground song.
Yeah.
It's like, you know what? Kill all of them. Kill them, even if they're innocent kids. What are they doing there? It's like
Men in
Black. Yeah.
It's like 8-year-old white girl, middle of the ghetto, bunch of monsters this time of night with quantum physics books. She's about to start some shit.
Yeah. What are they doing here? Nothing good. Kill them all.
Yeah.
And I'll apologize later.
Yeah. Just playing it safe.
Did you kill those kids?
Okay. Okay. It was a really scary island, and they were singing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star.
If you had been there.
Yeah.
Look, they were dancing in a circle. They weren't leaving footprints. Well, they were leaving footprints. Well, from the distance, it looked like they weren't leaving footprints. It's justified.
Hey, how's that working out for you, putting a sword through an undead pirate? Working good?
It'll dull your sword, man.
Yeah.
So
there's
shots like
a lot
this,
of options,
again,
really.
Shots like this are just like, Jesus. You know? It's like, even right now, I look at him and I go, Jesus. This is huge amounts of work.
And then
the
Davy Jones
texturing is a little plastic compared to how I'm sure they would do it now, but fuck it.
Yeah, now it'd be, you know, even more phenomenal.
Yeah.
But that, you know, it's also interesting that in the second one, you know, irregardless of the quality of the movie itself, the visual effects are
that's
still
not
even...
A word.
But I don't care.
Yeah, I was going to say, are we going to call him on that one? Because
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, but tweak, beef.
Can I get back to my point?
Okay.
Regardless of the quality of the movie.
Yes.
Thank you.
Regardless, like my raincoat.
It's
go on. I'm fascinated.
The visual effects of the second they're an entirely another level even over this.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean,
and actually what's about to happen, this fight that I was like, this movie needs to happen in this movie or it's bullshit.
And this is it now?
This is it.
Okay, good.
And but the work that they do blending between them
it's
and matching
nuts.
The animation and stuff is crazy.
I've always, every time I've seen this, tried to figure out where the skin goes, if it's just an opacity shift or if it's getting like sort of distorted into where the bone shapes
are
going.
Oh, yeah, it's
hard to follow. It just works.
It's getting warped away. They're doing a lot of work as they pass through.
And it's a great reveal for Jack, too, when it's like...
Yeah. I can't wait till to find out there's two plates and they just do a fade from one to the other and make you guys look like idiots.
You know what? You know what? I can't honestly say, because this Pirates movie didn't have a Cinefex article.
It has CG Society article, though.
Yeah, but I remember being so like, how can that movie not get a Cinefex article like the other two did?
What was out that month?
Huh? I don't know.
Yeah, it might have been. It could have been bumped.
Revolutions was 2003, wasn't it?
Probably. It was probably bumped for Matrix.
It does seem amazing and hard to believe.
Yeah.
And they had multicolored frosting for cakes back then.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you were on a good pirate ship.
Yeah.
What kind of pirate ship pussy ass shit you been doing?
Ooh, now she's
okay.
Now
this
she's
is great. Look at this scene. I mean, this shot. It's one long thing, and then
in. Yeah. Now the camera did lock down there at the end. There,
that's
so
true.
That could have been.
I love
a soft
how
split.
The music picks up right here. It's Elizabeth. Bum, bum, bum. Oh shit! Oh, it's the skeletons. I thought that was the cue for Elizabeth.
Yeah. Oh wow.
It's Elizabeth. Dum, dum.
Although that maybe that explains what happened on the score, because I bought the soundtrack to this.
Everyone's cross dressing now. What the hell?
This movie has an outstanding score.
She's in
score.
Men's clothes and there in women's clothes and what the hell
this
is Jack wearing?
This movie has an
pirates
outstanding
by
score.
Made by Ed Wood.
Yeah. It's Eddie Izzard's Pirates.
But on the soundtrack disc,
the tracks are mislabeled. They're offset by one. Yeah. So like the one that's Barbossa telling the story is like named incorrectly. It's named for like the next scene.
How do you
and,
screw
like,
that
like
up that badly?
I don't know. And I'm like, nuh-uh. And I checked it and like online and everything. It's like that's.
There must have been
totally
like a last.
Fucked up the cues.
They must have changed the lineup at the last second, and then the printing didn't get changed.
Yeah.
Or something that
because it's, cause it's literally you look at them and they're like offset by one. You're like, all right, that refers to that scene in the movie. You know,
I don't know what happened to Hans Zimmer. I know the plot, but not the story. The plot is Hans Zimmer used to write melodies,
and now he just runs a company.
And now he runs. Well, there's hey, I've got a fucking subplot coming up here.
Oh, sorry.
Try to wait for it. Now he writes chord progressions. So the Transformers theme is basically just the chords changing and not the the actual melody. Now, this is not specifically true, but as a general statement, that's about right. He writes at this point in chord progressions, and it's getting simpler and simpler, which brings us to Inception, we'll say, which is one note, basically.
Not even really a note.
Now, there's more
to
it than...
It's a remix.
There's more to it than that. But he used to write beautiful, really good scores. And then at some point along the way, Hans Zimmer, I might be mistaken in the details here. I think I'm generally on the right track. Correct me if I'm wrong in the forum. But at some point, he incorporated and has a company. His name is Hans Zimmer, and he has a company called Hans Zimmer, which if a movie needs a score, they'll contact the company Hans Zimmer to do it. So then the movie will say, score by Hans Zimmer. So sometimes it's like his interns writing his music for him.
He's a brand name now.
He's a brand name at this point. And this score was written by a number of guys, but I think the team of guys that were writing was Klaus Badelt was the guy that was leading the team.
Klaus Badelt got credit on this one.
That's
and
right.
And
Hans
Zimmer got credit
and I like,
for the
I like
other
Klaus
two.
Badelt. I like his he did this score for Poseidon, which I think is a really
Poseidon
good score.
Is great, and this one has some really wonderful melodies.
Well, the main theme, the theme that you think of that's called He's a Pirate.
He's a Pirate.
Is I freaking love that. That's a great piece of music.
Now let's do a thing here. Hum the score for Pirates of the Caribbean. Hum the score from Transformers.
Yeah, well, I'm out.
Give me a second.
Gonk, gonk, gonk.
Yeah, no, there's not. You can't do it like that. And that's what I mean by saying, like, the melody is.
Oh, no, it's. Wow, you're doing it. That's
exactly
it. Hey! That's Dorkman.
Dorkman knows that. Now you know that.
Yeah.
Negative 10 snob points to Dorkman snob.
Nice. It repeats like a Mega Man level, though. It's just the same thing over and over again.
Anyway.
You can loop it.
And then, okay, I'm Inception. Brah. Yeah. Anyway, my point is, you compare that to da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da or anything that John Williams ever did. And Danny Elfman, you can make complaints about Danny Elfman, but he does write some melodies. Remember the original Batman score? Fucking awesome.
Yep.
And the new one is just strings going, dong, dong.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Did Jeffrey Rush do his own sword fighting in this movie?
Probably
no.
Part
in fact,
of it,
a lot of but... the stunt work is by, what's his name? Thomas Derby, the guy that did the Do the Do fan film back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Essence of the Force.
No, he helped. I didn't know. I'm talking about the actual, like, stuntman. Is that Derby?
Yeah. Or whatever the guy's name is. The guy that was the lead Jedi in Essence of the Force was Barbossa's stunt double in this movie.
Right. Okay.
For the sword fighting stuff.
Got it. No, Pat Kirby is the guy I met.
Pat Kirby.
But that's not the name of the lead Jedi.
No. Derby. I'll check it out.
Anyway.
There's been a lot of fan films conversation. Thank you, Chris, for coming back.
Strangely enough, it comes back.
I met that guy in Vegas one time. We hung out for a little while. But no, I think his name's Pat Kirby.
I think I met him at...
Pat Kirby is a name.
I met him at one of the celebrations, the one that was in L.A.
Yeah.
It's good. It's good sword fighting, though.
Oh yeah,
it's quite good.
Great. And they're showing it off. You know, they're not getting all like ding 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 ding.
My favorite is actually Barbossa. I mean, it's he's usually a silhouette, and so it's probably the stunt double. But it's one of those cases of good character design. They say this in animation all the time, but it works in real movies too. Good character design is if you see the silhouette of a character, you know who it is. Mm-hmm. And Barbossa is when you see a silhouette of Barbossa, that's him. You know, and Jack as well. So. Even in silhouette, you know who's who, as opposed to them just sort of wearing generic e-piratey things. They're very distinctive.
I have been confirmed the director of Essence of the Force is Pat Kirby.
There you go. And he also played the lead?
Working on it. No.
Yeah.
No, it's a different guy.
I know the guy you're referring to.
How do they do this without tendons or muscles? Yeah.
Well, it's complicated.
I'm trying to figure out what his name is.
Thomas DuPont?
But there's
I think it is Thomas DuPont.
I think it's Thomas DuPont. Yeah.
We'll check the cast list. I think it's that. I knew it was a D last name.
Yeah. So this is just, the effects work and just the, you know, the work across the board.
Oh my God, the whole MacGuffin to the third movie.
Yeah.
Which he doesn't seem, he just seems...
His eyeball is important in the third movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh God, okay. They were kind of running out of, you know, relatives to
call,
kill.
Yeah. Callbacks.
Yeah. So, yeah, but okay, now here's my favorite, the thing with the explosive is my favorite trick.
Oh, that's very clever.
You know, the explosive
trick.
He puts
the explosive in the ribs and then pushes him out of the shadow.
Yeah, as if that wasn't about to happen before our very eyes. But yeah, it's like, you know, again, it's as we've talked about before, it's like, okay, well, we set up, these are the rules, and now we're going to have this climactic fight. And we're going to show you all the ways that we can apply those rules and go, oh, that's clever that, oh, you stab him, but, oh, he's a ghost. But then you don't stab him, but, oh, he's not a ghost anymore. And then the whole idea of, I'm going to stick a bomb in your rib cage and then make you a real person again.
In the chat, Zarban says,
Zarban
says, this fight scene sequences goes on too long. I don't disagree. And he follows up by saying, too many notes.
Well, just cut a few. Yeah, and here's this too. Here's another one of the little, you know, gags where it's like, okay, that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
I think the scene is great. I think I would have cut, what I would have cut is back, meanwhile, back on the other ship.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of incidental, epic-y stuff, and some of it's nice. But, you know, this is where the story's happening. So.
And then that's a quiet callback to... finally establishing it's like, oh, because Will's not fighting fair anymore.
Now,
he figured it out.
I will admit, the first time I watched this ending, I didn't. It happened too fast. I didn't know what happened. Uh-huh. I'm like, wait, what happened exactly? I don't quite follow. So, someone who's seen the movie more recently or knows better than I, what is going? What is the final?
So what happened at that exact moment is that he flipped the coin with blood on it,
with his own blood.
No. His own blood.
No.
Yes,
no,
his own blood.
Because Jack Sparrow had to pay
Will
blood.
He put it in his finger and cut his
palm.
Will had one.
Jack Sparrow had to as well.
Because he stole one, and that's why we have this
he stole one, so he was cursed. He cut his own palm and threw the coin back in, so that alleviated his curse, and then Will alleviating
his curse. And
then,
now he's mortal, and he can fire the gun.
It was very nice of the blood to wait until it was dramatically reasonable to show itself, however.
To be fair, Will hadn't deactivated the curse until about that moment.
Right,
hadn't finally done it.
And I'm just glad that the sequence was editing so quickly. Just this, that we didn't have the thing where Will was right in the moment and he's like, this, caught it, cut. Fuck!
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just cut his hand and put it in there. The next thing that happens was he went.
Yeah.
Yeah. Later on, that's going to hurt. He's still got the adrenaline enough that he hasn't noticed
yet. He hasn't noticed that his thumb doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
You cut too deep, you cut the tendons.
So does that mean that all the wounds...
Oh, I like this little gag. Just calling out like, wait, what's in there? And it's like, oh, yeah, that'll be an arm, won't it?
Yeah, no, it's just a guy's arm.
Yeah.
So does that mean all the wounds they've ever had in their life now suddenly hurt?
No, I think it's just the most recent ones.
So what's the cooldown period on that? Like half an hour, 45 minutes, it goes away?
Well, if you log out, they reset.
Oh, well,
that's good. That works out.
And they're all like, oh, yeah, we forgot how to fight.
That's right. Oh, we don't know how to.
No,
we could actually
mortal.
Get killed.
Yeah.
We used to love fighting because we never died. But,
yeah.
Now... Not so much. And then there you go. There's your payoff finally.
It's like playing the old video games when you had God mode on. if you had to go back to playing without God mode, you're like, I have no idea how
to do any of this.
This
is hard.
Yeah.
Yay.
I have no strategy.
Yes, I'm brave. Yeah. I fought with you, man.
I was in Brazil, you saw me, and that wasn't good in that movie.
Get a load of me.
Brazil is awesome.
Yes. I personally prefer the Love Conquers All edition. Shut up! Shut up!
Okay.
I need to see that version of Brazil because
need to see the Love Conquers All version, yeah.
Isn't that the studio version?
That's the horrible one,
yeah.
That's the bad version.
But it's important to see the difference.
Because why see the bad version?
I don't know. It's fascinating, I guess.
Yeah. it's a good study.
Okay.
And then I'll come back. I'll come back.
That's just like, you know, hey, you know that girl you think is really pretty? Oh, yeah, she's gorgeous. You should see her. We disfigured her. You should check that out, totally.
You should see her ugly sister.
You know, for comparison's sake.
Just so you appreciate. Just so you appreciate.
Just so you appreciate how beautiful she really is.
Yeah.
That train of logic, I'm not getting on board.
He is the king.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a king now.
No, Burger King.
Yeah.
They used to have those crowns.
That's a bit of a cheesy crown.
But yeah, again, Jack is not really the main character. He's
not.
He's half Han Solo and half drunken Obi-Wan that we've been doing.
Yeah.
He comes in and he's like, just so you know, you totally blew it just then.
Yeah.
Anyway, I got to go.
Actually, well, we've had this debate before as to, you know, what they get. It's really a lot of semantics, but it's like, he actually, I would say he's the main character, but he's not the protagonist. And of course, you
can split hairs. Yeah, yeah. No, no, that's fair.
This movie's clearly built around him. Everything's hanging off of him, but he's not a character in the sense.
So would you say that R2-D2 is the main character, R2 and C-3PO are the main characters, but not the protagonists of Star Wars? Because the movie is sort of built around them. See, that's where the semantics comes
in. Sense,
dude,
yeah.
Dude, the Three Musketeers are going to come save him.
That's actually a really good distinction, and
if you take all six movies as a whole, 3PO and R2 are the main characters because they are the ones who know the story and lived it all.
Yes. And her full of shit in the last three movies because C-3PO should have been like, meh.
Yeah.
They erased his memory.
No, no, R2's memory. He knows everything.
I said C-3PO. R2 knows everything.
Oh, C-3PO, yes.
C-3PO's a moron.
Really,
we're all clear on that, right?
Really, in the end of The Lord of the Rings, at the very end, you kind of realize that the main character all along was Sam.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I love that moment.
Well, they put Wise right in his name.
Yeah.
God, I hate parrots.
How
do we know he's shit?
Parrots are vile creatures, if you've ever actually been around one.
Yeah.
They're vile and horrible.
Vile?
Yeah. They're like... When you go, you know, that birds were descended from dinosaurs, parrots are the fucking proof. Because, like, that's a velociraptor. That thing was remembering that it was a velociraptor. It's like, yeah, sure, I'm blue and yellow now, but I would so mess you up if I could.
It's like how Tesla knows she's kind of a tiger.
Yeah. She has not forgotten her
roots at all.
Kind of
a cougar or something.
Yeah.
She'll just wait and, gotcha. Yeah. I play a game that you're not playing and I win every time.
Yeah, it's like, you know, hey, you're not supposed to do that. Tiger.
Yeah, exactly. So?
Tiger didn't go crazy. Tiger went tiger. So parrots are the same way. Parrots are just evil.
We could do Parrots of the Caribbean.
Because the problem is they're so smart. You know, that's, you know, a dog will kind of go, I could never beat you. Yeah, you totally could. You're just not going to do it. A parrot is like, you know, they stick around for 100 years and they go, I could fucking kill that guy. I could do it. I see how to do it. And then they try one day.
Zarban's asking if your father was killed by a parrot.
My father was killed by parrots.
We're slowly piecing this together.
Yeah.
Over the course of Down in Front, we're going to completely change Trey's wiki page.
Which is why I've never liked parrot movies.
Born of wolves, father killed by parrots, raised by...
And then I was raised by parrots.
Raised by cigarettes.
Which was, you know, of course, so I resent that. And then, of course, one day the
changeover happened and you slaughtered all the parrots on your way out.
Well, then the kangaroos came and they killed all the parrots and the kangaroos kidnapped me and they raised me. And then it was gypsies.
Who taught you speech?
The gypsies came and slaughtered all the kangaroos.
Oh, you should have said the kangaroos.
They insisted on raising me, but I was 22 by then, so that was awkward. And it went on from there.
Orlando Bloom learned how to front flip in between, you know, the last part of the last scene, and now that was good.
Nah, it seemed like he just trained himself and he ran around flipping and stuff like that because, like, someday I'm going to be cool.
This is like one of those Butch and Sundance together again scenes.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
He spent 3 hours learning to sword fight but 2 hours flipping.
Yeah.
Yeah. This scene struck me as kind of like, okay, I get it. It's a little okay, you know, kind of goes on a little long. It's kind of cute. And, the Butch and Sundance side. Now they're a team. But it's kind of like, kind of goes on for a while.
Yeah. I do like that nothing is easy, though. Every time there's an escape attempt or something, it's like there's always something that gets... They never just win like you see in a lot of movies. But
true enough. It's kind of like, oh, God damn it.
It's like so close.
Really thought we had that one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We were doing really well.
Yeah, did you see? That was I did a flip.
I did a flip, man. We had the rope.
You think that's easy in this hat?
Yeah. The hat stayed on.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea? Like, I spent days figuring out exactly how to put... Anyway.
I am a
You're not appreciating this. It's fine. It's fine.
Because I'm a man with a feather in his cap named Edward.
Yeah. When Dorkman gets into the character of a joke, he's, like, committed.
Yeah.
He's like the Woody Harrelson of being in that joke.
Well, when Dorkman tells a joke, this is important. Okay. What?
You should always wait. Never.
Yeah.
Let me start over.
Wait. Right? You got it? Okay.
I love that he's like my only weapon is breath.
And being a douchebag.
Yeah, that's all I've got right now. They took away my other ones.
And Norrington's like, breath, my only weakness.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay, well.
That's what. That's why he spends the time in between this and the next movie building up a tolerance.
I have straight up stolen that line before, where I'm like, I'm at like a thing or I'm at a place and there's a girl there and I'm talking to and we talk for like 15 seconds and then later I see her on my way and I'm like, never would work between us, darling, and walk away. Don't even look. Just go. Yeah. Just go. It's awesome. It makes you feel great. She might be like, fucking, I know.
Yeah, or she will never forget
you. It's just so fucking cool. It's just like, it never would have worked between us, darling. Walk away. Don't look. Fucking, it's explosion time. Just walk away.
Yeah, cool. Don't look back. Don't look back.
That's why, like, I'll skip that anecdote. In any case, look, pirate ships.
Oh, hey, my getaway ship.
Yeah, it'll be here in an hour.
Yeah. It's totally brilliant that he didn't get to finish his quip or whatever. He just fucking bumbled right over the side of the wall.
Captain Jack, ah!
You will always remember this as the day.
Fuck!
I think that's one of the things that makes this movie so interesting is every time you think you know what it's going to do and do the cliche thing. Not every time. There are a couple of the like obvious jokes, time to say goodbye and blah, blah, blah. But for the most part, there's always some kind of twist where it's like, nope, we're not going to let that happen that way. We're gonna come in and push that off to the side and, you know, we're going to stick our foot out and trip it up somehow.
And good for them.
Yeah.
I don't buy it.
It's interesting that he recognizes that he is the one who made the sword.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think they've shown that he's a smart dude. Mm-hmm. He understands that there is a, you know, he has to show the courtesy of, okay, he's the apprentice, you show Mr. Brown, mm-hmm. Mr. Brown's back, but he understands what's going on. Uh-huh.
It's very much suddenly the ending of Master and Commander here. Right. It's like, yay!
Okay.
We're chase him, but so let's during not make the, it too easy.
Yeah. During the inauguration.
But then after this, it's like, it's great. He's like, well, I'm still in charge and it's all good and it'll be fun. We'll chase him. And then, but then in the next movie, it's like,
he ruined my life.
I love the,
yeah, that didn't go well.
He destroyed everything.
I love the equivalent at the end there. Is this the path he chose? After all, he is poor.
Yes. He is a poor rat.
Yay. Oh, thank Christ.
What, kissing?
Yeah.
I threw stuff at Chris. Yeah.
They kissed! Yeah. Did you see that on Twitter the other day with the royal wedding? Like, one of the
trending topics
was, they kissed, in all caps. Yo. I'm like, oh, this is why everyone's so interested in weddings, because they don't understand how they work.
You realize that it's going to get even weirder later tonight.
Yeah. This was just a broad example of people studying the habits of wedded people.
Yeah. Studying
they kissed! Yeah. They kissed! I get it!
Someone write a paper.
Yeah.
Sociologists everywhere fascinated by the process
Let's
of marriage.
Let's get this published. I think we can publish
this. This is like an Onion article ready to go.
I have to say, this is totally dating the podcast, but yeah, the royal wedding, and everyone's like, oh, the royal wedding, it's the wedding of our lifetime. It's like, I was there for Charles and Diana, which was even bigger, and that went well.
Yeah.
That was worth getting excited about, wasn't it?
And as I said on Twitter, we fought that whole war so we could stop caring
who
the prince marries.
So we could stop caring who those people are putting their royal appendages into.
All right. Now, there is a just an exceedingly – I value something in movies more than other things in movies. And there's an exceedingly short supply of them. And that is the moment immediately –
Tits or GTFO.
That is the moment immediately before the credit roll. Whatever they do, it just makes you go, fuck yeah!
Yes.
And I love that right here. Da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. And really bad eggs.
My heart is your hope.
Your heart is your hope. Yeah. Fuck yeah! Like, I love that moment.
It's coming right now.
I'm going to get chills.
Yeah. Here it is.
I'm going to get chills right now, and the fucking thing is off.
Yeah, the sound is off.
Turn the sound
it's
on,
like,
then.
It's
Jesus.
It's a really perfect ending.
Oh, it's so cool.
Yo-ho, snap, boom, done, crash.
Yeah.
And Bring Me That Horizon kind of had
a
moment there.
That was an improvised line, too. That was something Johnny Depp came up with.
Yeah, that was a thing for a while.
Anyway. Well, they do that in Star Trek about at the end of every single Star Trek movie,
don't
they? Well,
yeah, they were trying for that sort of second star on the
right.
You know, everyone, they tried to do one. But, you know, that away.
Out there. Out there.
That away. They kept trying, but, you know. Anyway. Sometimes it worked and sometimes
but
it didn't.
But, yeah, I mean, you got to – it's like – I think we've talked about this. I don't know who specifically articulated it. You know, we can't credit it like Goldman or anything. But it's like start strong, end strong. A lot of people will forgive you almost anything in between.
It's the Eddie Izzard theory of public speaking. It's 90% how you look, 10%, you know, 70% how you look, 20% how you sound, 10% what you actually say.
Yeah.
There was a different sort of way of phrasing that.
Klaus Badelt. Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
Yay, Klaus.
thank you for being a real person and not a brand.
Yeah.
Plaz Bedelt TM.
Someone was talking, and this was like an old school Hollywood movie star who said this. I don't remember who, but it was, she said, you know what, really you just have to, if nothing else, you have to think of moments. It's like, if you can do a movie with 5 moments in it, people will go, that was an awesome movie.
And Joel Silver misheard that, and he thought that they said explosions.
Yes, exactly. But I think that's true, too. It's like, because you think back on a movie, oh, there was a scene where he turns to the camera, and it's awesome. You got to see it, you know. And, you know, a moment can be any number of things, but that idea is like,
is when you try to make them artificially.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think this movie is a little too long, but I enjoy the shit out of it every time I watch it.
Yeah.
I love the score. I love Johnny Depp. The world is a lot of fun, and it delivers everything it says it's going to do over the course of its running time. And even though it takes a little bit of running time to do so, it certainly does.
Yeah.
Chris, how do you feel about Pirates of the Caribbean?
Well said. Still holding up, even without sound. This is one of those movies where being here talking with you guys and not having the music is so noticeable, even more than just, oh, I want to hear them say so. It's like the music and the explosions and all of that together, the experience of all of that, I am left wanting. I want to now go back like next weekend and watch this again with the music.
Oh, there's great
sound.
We're
about
to
watch the next one, so
maybe between we'll run it for a while.
Yeah, that'll cleanse that.
Dorkman, why do you love this movie
much? I'm jealous of your wrap-up because you made it like a palindrome. That was awesome. you said the same thing twice, but like in reverse. It was cool. Anyway.
Yeah, I was doing the movie poster thing.
Why
do you love this movie so fucking much?
Well, you're saying it, it's a little too long, but even watching right here, I was seeing if I felt that way, and I totally don't. I'm like,
You just love the world that much.
I love the world. I love the characters.
That may be the best movie I've ever
seen. it's so interesting.
Thomas DuPont.
Yeah,
word. Fan films will make you famous.
Toms will be DuPonted.
Yeah.
The DuPontening.
Ponce will Tom do.
Bob Anderson.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, look, Jerry Gagne.
And just
catch him.
Fidel Castro. Oh, Fidel.
Fred Topped. I don't know who that is.
Why do you love this movie so much?
I don't know. There's just just everything comes together. There's a few little jokes that feel a little artificial, but other than that, it's just like Trey said, it's like there are so many reasons it shouldn't work, and they all work like for those reasons. Like they just thumb their noses at those reasons or like, yeah, that but we're gonna make that actually work for us in a lot of ways. And you know, Jack Sparrow is a great character here. Later on, he becomes kind of a caricature of himself. But, it was just such an out of nowhere, what the hell? Who makes a movie like this type of thing? And it's just so entertaining and fun. It's a movie I can watch over and over again.
Now, what do you say to Zarban, who in the chat room is pointing out that this movie this has no themes, moral, or symbolism?
So? Oh,
what?
That's what he says. What do you think? I think it has themes. I mean, obviously, it's overcoming.
That could have fucking come up 2.5 hours ago, so we could have.
It's about overcoming your place in the world. At least that's Will's theme.
Sure. Well, that's Elizabeth's theme too. She's expected.
He is a blacksmith. He's a pirate.
Yeah, she's expected to do certain things as a governor's daughter and as a woman and all that stuff, and she defies them. And Jack is focused on being a certain Jack is becoming the person he knows in his head that he is and he wishes everyone else saw. And he manages to do that. Like, what the theme is, I don't know. I'd have to think about that, but I'm sure it's there.
Pirates.
The dialogue editor, Terry E. Dorman. If you search for me on IMDb just as Dorkman, she is the one who comes up first. That's interesting.
Dorkman.
Anyway.
Did you mean Dorman? No, I meant Dorkman.
Yeah. No,
maybe this movie doesn't need to have such heavily prevalent themes and shit.
All movies actually do. It's pure entertainment. It's, it's a boy meets girl story with pirates in it. It's like.
I was asking myself, this movie's a lot like a love story.
Yeah.
because you barely notice that there actually is a love story going on in the middle of it, which got a little too prominent later on, but okay, fine.
I think what it is, it's a throwback to like the movies that you could love as a kid being like, I don't care about heavy themes and stuff like that. I just want to play in that world. I want to be that guy, I want to be his friend hang out and have adventures.
Yeah, I want to put on that costume. And of course, God knows a lot of people have done that. But it's true that... you know, another movie, and it's a weird, you know, a straight line from one to the other, but I sort of brought this up, of all things, the Zack Snyder Dawn of the Dead, which is a story in which no character has an arc and there are no themes that are explored. It's just a thrill ride.
Right.
And, hey, it's funny that this is kind of the ride, in a way.
There is a story arc. There is a story arc in Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead. The Best Buy salesman. He becomes the guy, the successful guy in a weird situation, because they have the whole moment where he's like, "What? There's no reason to listen to me. I'm a Best Buy salesman." But he's like, "But I am resourceful and smart, and I'm going to find my value out of
all this." That's a tiny, tiny arc. It's not exactly, Jane Eyre. But
no.
There's a tiny arc for him, and there's a tiny arc for the guy who's like a douchebag who then sacrifices himself. That's as close to an arc as anyone has in that movie.
Do you recall the arc of the bus that explodes in the pile of zombies?
Yes.
Because
exactly.
That was awesome.
Yeah, because it started out as a parking shuttle and became this like awesome war machine. So it has a total arc. Anyway, it's like, but there was a sensibility when I brought that up. I said, this movie is so, you know, Sid Field is somewhere going, "That movie stinks." It's like, it really doesn't. It's just, it's a ride. You strap in and you roll with it, and
thing ain't trying to be Chinatown.
Yeah, it's not like, and it's, you know, it's, and I would say that I didn't say it at the time, but it's like, you know what another movie is almost exactly like that? Alien. Where are the character arcs in Alien? No, it's just about, well, you're a douchebag, you're kind of resourceful. Guess what? You're the one who's going to live through this.
Yeah.
That's
the reason, you know, I would
and
say.
And this movie, so my answer is, you know, yeah, this is a kind of movie, if you deliver the fun and you deliver the, I was amused and I was impressed and I was visually excited by it and it was funny and entertaining and it only dragged a little tiny bit, I screw your themes. Yeah.
It doesn't promise any. It's not like it's setting up like it's going to be about
it'll
stuff.
It'll change your life.
Just,
Pirates of the Caribbean going to change your life. It'll show you and make you, it'll, if you're a Democrat, it'll make you a Republican. If you're a Republican, it'll make you into a Libertarian. And if you're a Libertarian, you'll become a goldfish. It's an amazing It's an amazing movie.
And on that note,
this has been Down in Front. You can always find more episodes at downinfront.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Get a brand new episode every single week. Twitter.com/downinfront. Facebook Down in Front Show. Emails at downinfrontshow@gmail.com. Go to the forums. It's a wonderful community of people that you should be there. And on the forum every week, we announce when the live shows are happening so you can involve yourself in the conversation literally in the chat room with video and everything. It's at downinfront.net/live. We have the forum to know when and where it's happening. Go to the store, buy this movie from us, get the shirts from us. Go to the PayPal, give us some money. We're not asking, we're just saying. Go to the store in the app marketplace and get this thing. We're going to have an iPhone 1 soon. Matt Peter Vader is the show notes and chapter on iTunes. Holden Hill is on the website. My name is T. Christie. What up?
Damn!
Now say your name.
And really bad egg.
Mike Scott.
Yo ho. Thank you very much for listening to Down in Front. Good night. Good night.
Dude, you nailed that one.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
I've never seen that. That was.
Thank you very much.
I think the goldfish thing surprised even Trey when it came out of his mouth.
I don't think the word is actually intelligible, what I actually say. No one's going to get the joke.
You said goldfish.
Was it clearly that I said goldfish? Because I was
laughing
as I said it.
But you started cracking yourself up, so that made it better then.
And I went, woo! So now we have a full ad campaign for a movie that doesn't exist. It's like champagne to the champagnening.
Trey's crying.
If you're a libertarian, you'll become a goldfish. I don't care what that movie is. I'm going.
It's going to make $75 million in the foreign market, guaranteed.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Anyway,
the implication
Coda,
that
the end scene here. What happens in the end scene?
Monkey.
The monkey recurses itself.
Yeah,
and
it's recursive.
Oh,
is this the funny with the line?
The monkening.
Is this the one where
ghost monkey? The monkening.
Nick Fury shows up and
monkeys will ghost.
Yeah, and they find he finds Thor's hammer in the treasure and
island will monkey.
Yeah,
ghost monkey.
When do they have time to do that fucking shot?
I know.
I think that was actually a last-minute thing, from what I understand.
Yeah, they finished the movie on a Monday. It's like, it's not due till Wednesday. Yeah. Jerry, go.
Let's get a shot of Raul Julia raising his fist out of the ghost monkey.
But wait, they
shot
that on set. They had a shot of the monkey swimming.
Guess that's true. No, you're right.
They budgeted for it.
You know, there's lots of, you shoot.
Ha!
Sometimes you shoot plates and you don't, you know, actually do them. Because you had the money.
Can that monkey swim? I got an idea.
Yes, no, whatever. Throw it in the tub.
I don't know. Put it in. Let's see.
I know how to find out. He's done with his other shots, right? Yeah. Okay, this would be easy.
You can swim, right? All right. Well, problem solved either way.
That's like the old Paula Poundstone joke where she says, you know, mom was trying to teach her to swim when she was a kid. And she was like, yeah, you're lucky. When I was a kid, they just threw me in the water to teach me to swim. I was like, Mom, I don't think they were trying to teach you to swim.
Anyway. Bye, guys.
Trying to find out if she was a witch.